Who's Afraid of Sunburns?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
No place to go, darling.
6:12. Welcome.
Yes, I'm going.
As far as we know, there were no casualties in the newsroom when it blew up.
Internet outage.
That's like the nastiest thing you can say in 2019, isn't it?
And it's so everyone went, oh, who just heard me say that? Oh, that's terrible. Yeah. Everyone knows what that is, right? And then it happens to a radio station. Think of all of the little intricacies that that's going to affect, from the commercials to the news to your...
I don't think there's anything more frightening than those two words, internet and outage.
Outage.
6:13. Dave, you didn't have any shrapnel from the newsroom blowing up, did you?
Well, I had my own issues. I don't mean my personal issues.
Let's be
issues.
Honest, pal. I've known you for 25 years.
How do you feel?
Yeah. No, my computer just blew up, but I got it back to normal.
We're all going to be okay.
Yeah, my traffic source wasn't working when I came in.
No traffic.
To be a morning after. All right, let's do the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
In the least surprising move in America, Mike Madigan has been confirmed as Speaker of the House once more. He enters his 49th year in the Illinois House of Representatives, and he will kill this state before he's gone. You got to give the guy credit. He is committed to the destruction of Illinois, and he's not going to leave until it's complete. One Democrat did not vote for Mike Madigan. That is State Rep. Anna Stava Murray from Naperville, who has already said she's going to take on Senator Durbin in 2020. Next. Shutdown talks. A waste of time, President Trump said. He took his shutdown and he went home.
Does that play? Is that like, do you consider him a strong figure that he walks in the room and then walks out 10 minutes later? Is for his base, do they go, oh, yes, that's what we want from our leader. He's not gonna sit in dumb
meetings.
Isn't
it funny? Because we're kind of getting down now to the percentage of the 35% that believes the nonsense.
I don't know. That's a weird move for him.
Now, the Adams family, Chuck and Nancy, didn't have any sort of counterproposal ready either, which was kind of a mistake either. So basically, we're right where we have been. Nancy Pelosi, who is the most powerful woman in America, she'll tell you that. It said, no wall. You're not getting a wall. This is not happening. And Trump said, not getting a wall. I'm taking my stuff and I'm leaving.
What's the longest we've had a government shutdown like this?
Thursday or Friday will be a new record.
Okay.
Yeah. Next. Former State Rep. Rick Sauer has been indicted in posting of sexual photos of others without permission. I don't know Rick Sauer. I don't know if he's guilty or innocent.
Sauer. Right.
But here's the deal. That's not a good idea. Let's write that down. That's not a good idea.
They changed the law. I don't know if it's a federal or state law, but as of January 1st, people who are convicted of doing that, it used to be you could get jail time. Now you could sue for damages, for punitive damages.
Oh, is that like the California thing? Because I think California led
California,
the way on that.
But it's this idea that victims...
Revenge porn?
Yeah. Victims can not only you can be in jail for doing that, but now you can sue and get for damages, psychological damages.
Well, no wonder Dave's upset this morning.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just seeing if you're listening to next. Carlos Sanchez played Juan Valdez, the embodiment of Colombian coffee and one of the most recognizable pitchmen in the world for four decades plus. Died yesterday. He was 83.
Wow.
So, next. Lady Gaga says sorry she ever worked with R. Kelly and says she will remove the what you want from her streaming service. Pardon me. I would be curious if, have you decided R. Kelly is never going to be something you listen to again?
We had this conversation off the air yesterday.
Yeah, I did it.
And Justin, well, you did it except for one song.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't have that song. But there are a lot of songs, R. Kelly, that I liked R. Kelly as a musician.
He's a great musician. Apparently a very bad human being, but a great musician.
I saw this movement yesterday saying delete your songs from your... So I went to my iTunes and I saw there were a couple hanger-ons. But there's one J-Lo song that I don't have on my... But I like, and I'm like, it's going to be tough not to... Not to jam that one that he's a feature on.
I thought R. Kelly's version of David. I don't know if you agree. I thought R. Kelly's version of "For He's a Jolly Good Fellow" I thought was really one of my favorites.
I know that.
I'm ready to give it up as well.
There's a big article in the Chicago Magazine just dropped about the 17-year story that Jim DeRogatis has been telling us this for 17 years.
Yes, yeah.
And now it's
got to be very frustrating for him.
Have you talked
to him, Pascal?
Yeah, I did. I don't know if he's frustrated, but I think that he's positive about it because he's like, yeah, this is I've been telling you guys this. So I don't think he's frustrated that he doesn't get ownership of it. I think it's
frustrated it hasn't developed before.
Yeah, but
that people hadn't taken the
sometimes there's great satisfaction though, a 17-year wait. To get and all of a sudden everyone's like seeing what you've saw the whole time. Yeah. Like, see, I told you.
You know, and he just he's talked about it on the show, and he's talked about it I think on the radio station. But this concept that he has become the only vessel for people to explore. Meaning, if you were a victim of R. Kelly, you had information, you went to Jim. Imagine that, like the idea that he would be the one. His phone's blowing up, and it's someone who says they've been victimized.
Well, he should feel good about the fact that he rolled the ball and got all this developed because the National Sexual Violence Hotline, for instance, is up tenfold since the documentary came out just the other day. And I promise not to bring up the Bears again. It's not my fault. Vic Fangio's gone.
Well, this is good. This is a new story.
Vic Fangio leaves the Bears to become the head of the Denver Broncos. Listen, I don't know if Fangio would be a good head coach, but he deserves a shot.
I think he probably will be. And... It's a little odd because you kind of would have thought they would have gone for an offensive guy there because they've had quarterback issues since even Peyton Manning, the year they won the Super Bowl, didn't have a great year. But
I think Elway is more involved than people know on the offense.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, then his quarterback issues then don't reflect real well on him, and he's all
he needs
to get quarterback.
Fired after the offense.
Well, he's got to get the right quarterback, and that's why I like Denver, and I'm tanned, rested, and ready.
Who do you want for the defensive coordinator, Steve? A little Rex Ryan, maybe, perhaps? Come on in.
Probably not a great idea. No.
Last night I was listening to a sports station, and a caller called in and said Lance Briggs.
Yeah, there you go.
It's like,
how about Mike Singletary?
He hasn't coached anything.
Mike Singletary is a head coach. Singletary?
Mongo. How about Mongo McMichael?
Just gonna go down.
That actually was Mongo. That was Mongo right there.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, Chuck Todd is nice enough to join us early on a very busy day for him. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Cochran.
I'm curious about a number of things because, you know, that's who I am, Curious Steve. But one of which is, does off the record mean anything in Washington anymore? It just means like...
It does to me.
Well, I mean, it does to you. But I mean, the big picture, things like your lunch that you were at the other day, that leaked.
By the way, I don't, you know, I think the media attendees are the convenient scapegoat. All I would say is, there are other people in that room that had incentive to leak what was said there, and it wasn't the media. It was members of his own staff who were pretty upset with him for saying what my guess is for perhaps saying what he said. But I don't know what he said for sure because it was off the record.
A train wreck. The Manafort story from earlier this week, which, you know, there's not a lot of room to talk about, is huge, and that is that... Paul Manafort sold data, election data, to the Russians, direct, you know, ties from the campaign to Russia. And it's barely getting room to be talked about because of everything else. Is that just an assessment by design or just a happy accident for Trump?
I think it is both. When I say by design, I never believe that President Trump is thinking, you know, 6 weeks in advance, the Mueller report is coming, right. I better start this fire now and all that stuff. However, he does believe that. I do think he believes anytime there's a vacuum, it's filled by Mueller. So don't leave a vacuum, right? And in some sense, his comfort level is as the fire starter. I mean, one of the ways I've been referring to him, he's sort of a political fire starter because it's like when he runs into, it's like when he gets cornered, you know, he doesn't know what to do. I'll just start a fire and see what happens, right? And it may get out of control. This shutdown fire may become the political thing that just sort of is the beginning of the end of his relationship with Republicans, which then only sours worse once Mueller comes. So, you know, I do think we are headed, we're going to look back in 6 months and say, remember when the year began with a shutdown? I miss those days. It was because we'll be in them.
The shutdown, by the way, the number of the day is 21, and the word of the day is confusion, because the other thing that I'm confused about is this little trip to the border today. Are we going to get an emergency declaration of emergency? Because I don't know about you, Chuck. An emergency to me is something that's emerging, and it's happening now. It's not something that's gone on for 21 days. So if it was an emergency today, it's an emergency last week.
Well, believe it or not, though, if you're a government worker, I would imagine many of them are just going to just declare emergency and open the government and then fight in the courts to see if you can prove that this emergency is legitimate. You know, it is the political way out. And frankly, we are in a political emergency, you could make you could say. And he certainly has a political emergency. I think that the reason they're hesitant to pull that, to go down that road, is simply, I could argue, it probably makes it harder for him to get his wall built, not easier, because I think the court fight, nobody knows how it will end. But then even if you win in the courts, the individual fights that he would have with eminent domain and things like that, there's a reason why he hasn't pulled the trigger, because folks have explained to him how complicated it would actually make it even harder.
Chuck, it's amazing to see yesterday the meeting that was 20 minutes and the president walking out of it and saying bye-bye to the congressional leaders after, in front of the country the night before, he said, I want a meeting tomorrow in the Oval Office. Where are we with that? And I wonder specifically about people who support the president. Do they see that as a position of strength, or is there a concern that this shows a more petulant president, or someone who is not willing to negotiate as he says he wants to?
I think we're going to find out. You know, there are degrees of supporters to the president, right? There's a hardcore base that loves the stick it in the eye disruption aspect of this presidency. You know, I've these people are the folks that will tell me, I love it that he makes you guys crazy. You know, there's that part of his base. But then there's another part that is the, they like his policies, aren't as crazy about him personally. The ones that always say, I wish he wouldn't tweet so much type of supporters. They're the shaky ones here, right? They're the ones that are just, this has always been. And I think in the Senate, by the way, they're represented by people like the Rob Portmans of the world, the Pat Toomeys of the world. And it's that part of his support group that I think that he is putting into danger here. And I don't think he fully appreciates it. I think he just, at the end of the day, believes the base is the only thing that will allow him to survive Mueller. So he's got to do whatever he has to please them. But I think this is the classic case of cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah, the problem is when you have no strategy and you fly by the seat of your large pants, what is the end game, as you brought up on MTP Daily yesterday? There isn't any.
Well, here's the biggest problem that we're faced now is compromise. If you're a Democrat and you want to meet in the middle, it looks like you're taking Trump's side. And if you're a Republican and you want to meet in the middle, it looks like the perception is you're taking Pelosi's side. In this polarized world we live in, if the two political if these elected leaders really believe that the choice is between Trump and Pelosi, then we're here for a while.
As a diehard Packers fan, and of course your hometown Miami Dolphins, we're having a kicker clearance sale. I wonder if you're interested in that. We got a Cody Parkey, barely used.
I hear you there, man. But you know what? It was blocked. Cut him some slack. It was blocked. Here's my problem, Steve. This is the year where I have realized that, I know, and I apologize to those that are a couple years older than me, but this is the year where the coaches for all my favorite teams are now younger than me, and half the presidential candidates running are now younger than me. I have hit this, like,
oh, it's not good.
That, like, the new Packers head coach is 39. What have I done with my life? What have I done with my life?
Okay. Thanks for coming on early. I appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
That's Chuck Todd. And joining us here in a few minutes will be Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein, and I believe 2017 Guest of the Year, Bridget Gaynor.
That is correct.
Are we still taking votes on the 2018 Guest of the Year?
No. Voting has ended.
All right. So who was it?
It was that guy from from North Carolina that wrestled the bear.
Yeah.
Punched the bear. Remember that guy?
I'd go with that.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
He was the best.
All right, let's find that call and play it tomorrow. The bear face punch in the face
just
call.
The bear.
That's a guest of the year for 2018. Yeah.
His wife helped make that conversation even better.
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So she's the guest.
She's in there cooking
couple.
Dinner.
Well, call him a couple.
I think Chuck was referencing being older than all these people in government. I think when Jeremy Colleton was hired, he's closer to your children's age than your age. And that was one of those wake-up moments, okay.
Welcome to the party, yeah. Rest of you. By the way, Dave, not a quality loss last night.
No.
For our Blackhawks.
No?
No. The overtime, they didn't challenge the puck. They didn't challenge the Preds. The Predators on a 3-on-3, even strength situation, changed on the fly just by playing keep away with the puck. Just aggravating. So aggravating.
Forsberg was like just, doing whatever he wanted on the ice.
I just, you should have heard some of the things I said to my TV.
So you don't give them any credit for coming from behind,
sure,
from two goals down in that game to get it to overtime?
Absolutely.
So what constitutes a quality loss?
A quality loss is at least challenging in overtime. They didn't touch the puck.
So, but the first 60 minutes...
You have to remember what the definition, the long, time-honored definition of a quality loss is. Quality loss is losing but staying competitive for the entire game.
Forcing OT against a division leader?
That's not a quality loss.
So
that's a quality forcing of OT against the division leader, which is much longer for the analytics.
And when you discuss the long-held belief of the quality loss, this has existed now for, 24, 36 hours?
I'd go 96. I got to go back 4 days on this. I was texting with Doc Emmerich last night, who did the game. Another great call by Doc. I'm surprised Doc doesn't curse. He's seen a lot of hockey. But he's a better man than I am.
Well, yes, he is.
Hey, easy. It's coming up on 6:30. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get your headlines next. A big show today, as always. Glad you're here. Thanks for listening to 720 WGN.
I'm Steve Percentage. I'm Steve Percentage. Whoa,
whoa, everybody's talking about it. It's the latest from John DeCoste.
I'm Steve Percentage. I'm Steve Grzanich.
It's called Nothing Rhymes with Grzanich. It's the Steve Grzanich love song. It's his theme song. Did you have a big night playing that for your friends and neighbors?
I did. Lots of comments about that song yesterday to me.
What did Faye say?
I don't know if she heard it yet or not, but
maybe that's Steve's.
A couple of my friends did find something to rhyme with Grzanich, but I can't say it out here.
Probably seems good,
but it was fun.
Pat Brady's here, and let's go first to what Pat's known best for, travel. You're just in here yapping about your fabulous vacation with your family. Where did you go?
Grand Cayman with brother Kevin, his family. It's great family.
I've never been to the Caymans. Now, is there a Grand Cayman, an average Cayman, and a below average Cayman? Why is it called Grand Cayman?
I just Cayman? Got upgraded to Grand.
You did?
Yeah,
they kicked you up to Grand?
Started the state school move.
Why? How many Caymans are there?
There's Grand and there's Little. It's just, it's about, I don't know, a couple hundred miles south of Cuba, straight south of here.
So you fly to Havana first and then go from there by car?
Yeah, no, exactly. I drove.
You've been there before.
Yeah, we go every year. It's great. It's a great, and there's a direct flight. I think United's got a direct flight in Cayman Air, but that's guaranteed good weather. It's always 85 and sunny.
Sounds great.
But the best part of it is 2 weeks with the kids. Man, do I do a lot of intel gathering.
Right.
A lot of intel gathering. I learned some things.
Break down their defenses.
I had to text one of Pat's kids to get a hold of Pat because Pat has a bad string of phones lately, and he wasn't answering me. And so
we don't even know how many burners he carries.
I had to go direct to one of the children to get Pat to answer me.
Great trip. Good with your family.
Yeah,
happy New Year.
Christmas?
Yeah, it was nice. Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, you too. Everybody, it was a good. It's a longer break than it was. Back in the day,
Two weeks is a long time for you to be gone.
You know, I can work from there, though. I did work
with that shady operation that you're running.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down there taking money down, putting it.
Laundering
it is
money.
Funny to go downtown there and you see all these buildings, kind of nondescript buildings with big names on them of financial institutions.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's nice.
Are any of them called Hide American Money, the bank?
Hide American Money, Ham.
Right.
But you see these big names.
And three Cayman Islands from the 630. Grand Cayman, Little Cayman, and Cayman Brock.
Yes, exactly.
Cayman Brock's a guy that just wanted to name it after himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's the best scuba diving, supposedly, in the world.
Did you scuba?
I did. Almost drowned, but it was a good time.
Yeah, now you're a really good swimmer, I'm told.
Well, the seas were angry that day, Jerry.
The quote is, the seas were angry that day, my friend.
Are there a lot of jellyfish in the area?
There were. We were diving, and I saw a couple jellyfish, a big eel. There's a lot of critters. There's a big wall there that drops off like 6,000 feet.
You know, it's their house. You're in their house, so they get to swim there.
I respect that. Believe me, I wasn't playing with the more eel-like brother Kevin.
Is that right?
No, he got a little close, but yeah.
It's a bad idea.
So, yeah, you saw all those. So there's a drop-off, and is that where you go?
6,000 feet, and you kind of float over the drop. They don't let you go that deep.
Yeah.
We were only 60 feet.
So did you come up too fast when you were scubing?
I had trouble getting back on the boat because there are 10-foot swells, and I didn't. I'm not exactly Jacques Cousteau, and my flotation thing wasn't blown up all the way, and I'd taken my flippers off, and I started.
You mean your water wings?
Yeah, my water wings. Yeah. I had them around my ankles. And so I started going backwards, and you're supposed to go forward, but it was fun. It's beautiful. Just
when you
absolutely
have,
spectacular.
When you have the drop-off like that, is that the spot where there's going to be more critters? That's the idea?
They hang on the wall. They live in the wall. The moray eel lived in the. That's where the sharks hang in the big race.
Is it like a dog waiting for you to drop food at the house? The critters, sea critters, are waiting for food to be tossed into the water?
There's some of them that follow you around, but you're not supposed to feed them.
I'm sure everyone follows that rule.
I wouldn't. It's really, if you don't, it's really spectacular.
I can't even imagine. Now, I went snorkeling. Is it similar to snorkeling, the same concept? I mean, snorkeling is just right down. I did that in Jamaica, where it's just like right underneath. And I saw the big manta ray and the whole bit. But scuba diving seems like that would be much.
Yeah, snorkeling is when you wear your water wings and go out and float around just outside the. Yeah,
I've snorkeled. You don't even need your water wings. Yeah. Get in the water, bend over, stick
scuba
your head in the water.
It's a whole different thing.
It's you're weightless. It's kind of freaky, breathing through your mouth.
Underwater
and going, you know, if this thing quits. Although it's safe, it'd be, you have another backup, but you get down there. At least I'm not that experienced.
Do they have you swim with guides?
Yeah, and you always have a buddy. You go out with a guide. You get people, you have pros with you.
Yeah.
But it is, it's
They ever kink your hose just for fun? By the way, that's not code.
No, it's a good idea, though.
Are all your kids certified?
Two of them are. Two of them are. The other two.
The problem with scuba diving, it takes all day. Like, you don't ever go out for just an hour. Usually those excursions are.
There's no scuba diving drive through.
Yeah, we did. You do two dives. It's half day, but it's a full day. I was pretty.
So how deep are you?
I'll bet. I think we went 60 feet. My brother Kevin's done like ice diving and.
Wow.
And really.
Listen, I've met your brother. Your brother Kevin makes you look normal and calm.
Yeah. I think you can smoke cigarettes underwater, too.
Always a good idea around a fresh oxygen supply. While you were out, a number of things happened, but you mentioned, and we'll get to them, but the rising seas, the 10-foot waves, this just happened overnight. I don't watch this show, but I'm well aware of it, and one of the boats used in Deadliest Catch capsized yesterday.
Which one?
The Mary B. 2.
Oh, no.
Ooh.
None of the regulars on the show were on the boat, but one of the crew members, who you may or may not have seen, who literally was taking his last voyage, died. Three people died, all three on board, when the boat capsized. And the guy that was quitting, Josh Porter, I don't know if that rings a bell to anybody, Josh Porter said, I'm done. This crew isn't qualified. They're not experienced enough. And went out for one last and didn't come home. The U.S. Coast Guard Pacific Northwest said the responders were battling 12 to 14-foot seas. The Coast Guard was actually on the scene when the boat capsized because the crew had called and said they needed an escort because the waves were too much that the ship was taking on. And when the boat flipped, they were actually in the area but couldn't save anybody.
Man, that's terrible.
When you started that story and you said to Pat while he was out, I thought you were doing an analogy for the government.
Well, I was going to launch into all the things that happened. I figured that's no time.
Yeah.
But it does, you know, the oceans and the seas, they get the rule. You know, it's their thing.
The NASA channel has a thing. It's like a satellite view that goes 24 hours. Just a satellite picture of the Earth, and you can watch the satellite go around with a camera, and you realize that this Earth is mostly water.
Yeah. 70%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we always look up as opposed to scuba diving with you, and there is, you know, millions and millions and millions of things, species that we don't even know about,
you know,
at the deepest parts of the sea. Some of them, by the way, look like Trump.
And it's tough not to care for the environment when you get down there and you see, like, there was a plastic bottle. I'm like, oh, man, this kind of ruins. That shouldn't be down there.
Do they do it politically there? Do they talk about the environment, saving the reefs and all that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there's a big issue with the ports down there. There's not a port. You have to take a little boat to get in. I think there's a big issue there. But they dock on the reef, and every time they throw an anchor down the reef, they rip up some of the reef.
So where would you recommend people stay when they go there?
Listen, it's not cheap, so we rent a condo and never go out to dinner. You go down to the shore and get fresh fish every morning from the locals. But any of the condos, VRBO, there's a million nice condos there.
Hmm. Well, I'm glad you had a good time.
Maybe I'll get a free trip now for all these plugs. Cayman Air. They come out of Chicago.
Would you do me a favor and sit in on that meeting for me?
I will, for sure.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
This would be cool if you could go to Grand Cayman to see the Average White Band. Huh? Right? In concert?
They're having a huge concert down there in February with a bunch of big-name bands.
Right? Big names to you or to the kids?
To the kids I knew. They didn't know who Paul McCartney was, so there is a generational divide.
That's disappointing.
Yes.
He's a bassist.
Later on. Oh, that old band Wings? Yeah. Later on, Dean will have more on this, but Variety is reporting that the Motion Picture Academy will announce today the Oscars will not have a host. Okay. So Dave, you turned him down, huh?
Yeah, I don't.
Would you had a game or something? Conflict?
Well, I just want to hang out.
Right.
Did you see the seats he gets at the Northwestern game?
They're pretty good.
Me a picture, yeah.
Yeah, those Northwestern basketball seats. So you ever considered scalping those?
No, I really never have.
You're walking in, Dave goes, I got two. Who needs two?
That's a really good conversation to have.
Literally on the 52 feet from the court.
Yeah.
You got to sit next to a guy that's going to talk basketball all night, but get you a great seat, right?
Other than that, you have a good view of the game.
While you were out, Pat Brady, the Ed Burke story has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, you've known Alderman Burke for a long time. I've known him casually for a long time. I certainly don't know him as well as you do. He knows everything that's ever gone on politically in this town. Where is this case going to go?
Well, they charged him by way of complaint, which is not a grand jury indictment, with I think one or two counts of attempted extortion.
Yeah, you read the complaint.
Yeah, I read the complaint, and when you file a complaint different than go to the grand jury, it has to be supported by an affidavit. And there was a lengthy affidavit submitted by the FBI agent that talked about wiretaps and cooperating witnesses and statements and emails and things like that. So it was a very detailed application that they submitted. Now, so they'll probably sue. I think they have 30 days. They'll supersede that with a grand jury indictment, which word on the street is it may be broader, maybe not. But I got to say, I've known him for a while. The other side of Ed Burke, I found him to be a very compassionate guy and a lot of things he's done in public service. So the rush to judgment on him, I think people need to take a deep breath. And I'm not here to defend him, but I'm saying I read the complaint and the charges and the affidavit. And it's not, certainly not flattering, but I think it's a defensible case. I don't think it is. Here's the corruption case of the century, and this is what he did. I mean, it's attempted extortion, which is a somewhat of an unusual charge. And again, I'm not criticizing the Bureau or the people that did the work because it's not great. But
what kind of penalty are we talking about?
I think the guideline range is 27 to 32, something like that.
Are you surprised that both Democrats, obviously people running for mayor are going to say something politically, even though they have connections, but we saw Governor Rauner just this week before, in his last appearance, say, I'm glad they got him. I mean, there has been this rush to judgment, or at least they want to vilify him.
Yeah, and that's politics, and there's nobody that knows it better than Chairman Burke, and I think he probably understands that, and that's the things people are going to do. I think maybe the silver lining in all this, some of these candidates, particularly Bill Daley, are talking about some pretty drastic reforms, which are long overdue, and maybe this is the catalyst for those reforms with a guy like Ed Burke actually getting in trouble.
Well, is this one of these flip cases? I mean, is it conceivable that they would go to Ed Burke, so you're looking at, what did you say, 3 years?
27 to 32 months, yeah.
And so, you know, because, again, Ed Burke knows everybody and knows everything that's happened, and would he flip and would he give other people up?
I think not, because typically a flip case, you're flipping somebody lower. Maybe the guy below him that was named in the indictment that might have some information about other people. I don't think so. And I really think my point of actually having read the charging document, it appears to be, at least in my opinion reading it, a defensible case, meaning it's not a slam dunk guilty.
Yeah, but defensible case to the public means maybe he did it, but a good lawyer can get him out of trouble.
Yeah, but that's the calculation, whether you're making the determination of whether to cooperate or not, is how good you're, the chances of
right,
being acquitted.
Right, but in regards to, you know, changing things and reforming politics the way they've always been done in Chicago, I think the public would see defensible case different than...
I absolutely agree. No, yeah. Public, absolutely. I'm talking totally legal.
Right.
I could see this being a defensible
Pat,
case.
Pat, do you see... I saw the stat yesterday. I think it was 37 of the 50 sitting aldermen have accepted money from Ed Burke at one point or another, fundraising. When we see stories like that, what are we supposed to take away from that? Is that normal? Is that just politics as usual? Or is that something more nefarious?
Or should you become an alderman and get some money?
Well, the reality is money fuels politics, and there's not... Ed Burke is one of the most powerful people in the history of the city. He's chairman of the finance committee. He's a prolific fundraiser. He's involved in a lot of things in the Democratic Party for years. So, yeah, I don't think it's unusual at all that people would have received contributions. One of the things that's a big controversy in his case was the part of the allegations are that some of this money he tried to steer to Tony Preckwinkle, who's running for mayor, which I think sparked a lot of the reaction from her opponents in the race.
When you have someone step down from a position like finance chair that he did, that he held for a while, is there a domino effect of things that change immediately?
Yeah, well, wait, I would think so. I mean, that it opened the vacuum. There's a big spot there. He's a big figure, and for him to be gone, yeah, I think the real back is Bridget coming in today?
Yes.
Yeah, she'll have a real Bridget good Gainer. Insight on that. But I would imagine there will be.
Let's get to the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom and Steve Grzanich next on 720 WGN.
The federal government remains shut down for one reason and one reason only, because Democrats will not fund border security.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. Nobody gonna shut you down.
It is 7:10. Cook County Board Supervisor and 2017 Guest of the Year, Bridget Gaynor's here. Good morning, Bridget.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Happy New Year.
Yeah. How's your New Year?
Great, actually. Yeah, I had the big show. Thanks for coming up.
Yeah.
Pat Brady's back from scuba diving, and Eric Adelson will join us shortly.
I just want to say, for the record, I hate Bridget Day, because this will be the last time I get to the microphone, because you never ask me a question when Bridget's here.
When Bridget's
She's
here. Now, listen, when
guest
Bridget's
of the
here.
Century.
When Bridget's here, what I generally do is introduce and reintroduce people and then ignore you. Yes. All right. So a list of the departments working without pay. The FBI, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, Drug Enforcement Administration, Customs and Border Protection, State Department, Coast Guard, IRS, and Homeland Security. Among folks affected, agriculture, commerce, justice, and Homeland Security, as mentioned. So if it's an emergency on the border, and we're under great danger because our border is being overrun, wouldn't you want Homeland Security and TSA, the people in charge of keeping us safe, to be actually at work?
Yeah, the art of the deal ain't working out so well on this one.
I'm just looking for logic here.
No, there's no logic to it. And he backed himself into a corner, and the Democrats, they won. They don't have to play ball with him. And he's in a bad spot right now.
Why don't they have to play ball?
Because they're going to pass the bill out of the House that has the funding. The sad thing for the country is he had a deal before with
for more money,
just to get. And then the compromise here is clear to everybody:
DACA,
and then give him his money. Then everybody wins.
Yeah, we had Durbin on, and he said the same thing. He's like, "We did that compromise." He said no. So where do we go?
Is that called the art of the deal?
That's the art of the deal. The art of the deal is...
The art of the F-up.
And now it's affecting the country. TSA, anybody that travels, or the air traffic controller, Coast Guard, any things you just mentioned, those are, I think, Bridget, those are pretty important functions, don't you?
I think so.
So, as we discussed with Chuck Todd 30 minutes or so ago, what's the end game here? The end game, it could be today, when he has his, as he put it, apparently, behind closed doors, his stupid photo op at the border. He declares a national emergency within the powers of the presidency. It immediately gets challenged in court. The courts rule against him. And then he says, like he has with other court rulings, stupid courts, hey, I tried. Is that his win? Is that his exit ramp?
I think his win is, Bridget, it'd be interesting to get the other side's perspective.
Oh, believe me, I'll ask her.
I know, but thank you. Thanks for
multiple times.
Thanks for coming in.
More
Steve.
Than you.
my
He's letting you go first to get it out of the way.
Yeah, he's going to shut me up here in a second. Yeah. My thought is, though, does that then change the argument to Trump versus the Democrats trying to limit his power as president versus the actual issue? It becomes more of a process issue than the one that we're actually dealing with, and thereby he can walk away and declare victory. Because there is no good end game for him, Maryland.
There isn't, but I think calling a state of national emergency when we are clearly not in a national emergency is one of those things that, like, what's the slippery slope when they, you know, start to seize a whole source of power? Like, when do they come in and start telling you what you can say on your show?
And if you take it to the courts, there is a chance he wins. Right. And if he wins, a legal precedent is set for every president to go, I don't like what you did today. Right. It's a national emergency.
We're not curtailing his power by not allowing him to declare a national emergency, because there isn't a national emergency.
Right.
This is a political crisis. This is a political situation.
So, but the 42% of the people that he's speaking to,
35
or 32, whatever it is, thinks there's a national emergency.
Well, what about the 65 that don't?
I agree, and that's the long-term, not smart strategy for 20.
No, I think the 35 or the 42 think that there's a political power struggle and he should win it by whatever means necessary. I don't think they walk out and think, our country's in crisis and I'm not safe leaving my house.
And there's a good portion of the 42% who work for ag, commerce, justice, homeland security, and other places. 72% of this country lives paycheck to paycheck.
We know
that statistically. These are people who may have voted for Donald Trump who are being hurt by Donald Trump. So I don't buy that everybody's on board with this.
I respectfully disagree with guests of the century. I do think that in the base of the party, and I've been to these things, I watched McCain's campaign blow up on it in 2008. However you define national emergency, I think they see this as a big, big issue.
I don't think you can call them they anymore. I don't think it's a cohesive bunch that are just going to... Now, here's why they could be a they, I suppose, because he spent so much time talking about this base versus that base. The 35 to 42%, whatever the number turns out to be, that are with Trump, they're not voting for a Democrat. Doesn't matter what happens. I mean, when it comes down to a choice of two people, if Trump's still on the ballot in 2020, they're going to vote for Trump. So it's wasted energy just to even talk about it.
Look, I think the big issue that people think is out there is, what is the economic viability? They're worried about immigration. They're worried about their ability to be employed, their kids' ability to be employed. What is the future of the country in that regard? That's not the same thing as, can we build a wall right now?
I agree.
What's the difference, though? And put the wall aside, we talk about immigration reform. We saw this with Obama. He had to go the route of an executive order because Congress was blocking anything that was being done. What's the difference 4 years later with this president? I mean, he was elected a lot on the idea that he was going to do immigration reform for his base. So what is the difference this time around than what was happening 4 years ago with DACA and the executive order?
Credibility problem.
I mean, whose part?
With the president.
Yeah.
Eric just walked in. I mean, to me, that's the problem for him, because Obama got away with it. But I think people actually believed it when he said something. With this guy, nobody believes anything
he says. It's a completely different world than it was in 2014.
Eric just walked in.
Eric Edelstein's here. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good.
And happy New Year to you. Have you seen any list that lists the concern about our border as top five with the average Americans? Because
no.
I haven't.
No. No, only, like these guys were saying, only among the base. Look, he's
even
not
the guy in Texas, the congressman, Republican from Texas.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
hurt.
A stupid idea.
Yeah, yeah, well,
you
hurt.
Know, it's playing to base. It's changing the subject. I mean, look, he's a terrible strategist. He's a great tactician. He knows how to play a day, and then he wakes up every other day and figures out, what should I do today? There's no grand strategy here. He just knows, oh boy, I'm getting hammered, and Mueller's closing in, all this stuff bad is happening. Hey, when I was at those rallies and I said wall, everyone started cheering. Maybe I'll start saying wall again. Hey, let's shut down the government. Cool, good idea.
I agree on the no strategy thing, but this strategy, that if he has a strategy at all, that this takes the Mueller thing off the front page, I actually think that helps Mueller. Because Mueller's been dripping along for months and people kind of tuned out. If they come out with something big here now, it's going to be news again.
Yeah.
There's a good analogy that a friend of mine was married to a famous woman and it didn't work out. And in talking to her, she described it this way. I'm a really good girlfriend and a really bad wife. That's Donald Trump. I figured it's going to happen. The president's listening this morning. He's going to call in a few minutes. Well, more on this political wackiness. But first, the most valuable person on the planet for Thursday, January 10th, 2019, is Matt Lindbo, a 19-year-old Eagle Scout from Redwood Falls, Minnesota. And Matt joins us on the phone now. Good morning, Matt.
Morning. How are you?
Happy Eagle Scoutness.
Thank you.
You got your 137th merit badge a year ago. Good God, what do you not have a merit badge in?
That's a good question. I don't know. Not too much. I can't do that these haven't covered.
What is the most challenging merit badge you earned?
Oh, so my most challenging one, and sadly, it's kind of the hard one to admit, is bugling. I'm a trumpet player in school, so it's very embarrassing.
It's a whole different discipline, right? Bugling and trumpeting.
Yeah, so it's my braces actually kept me from hitting those high notes, so I had to really practice a lot because of the air going through your teeth through the braces. So that was probably the hardest.
So for you future Eagle Scouts, bugling is a concern. Now, what's the oddest one outside of bugling that you have, merit badge-wise?
Oh, the oddest one? I would probably... I think pulp and paper would be probably the oddest.
Pulp
one.
And paper? What are you making paper from trees? What is it?
Yeah. So you actually make kind of like a paper mache mix, and then you actually make paper. You let it dry in the actual paper.
Any chance you have a merit badge in kicking? Because we could use one here.
I wish. No.
All right. The most valuable person on the planet is Matt Lindbo, 19-year-old Eagle Scout, Redwood Falls, Minnesota, on the phone. Isn't Pat an Eagle Scout?
Yes.
Your husband, Matt?
My husband is an Eagle Scout, though he is a little bit older than you.
He's a lot older than you,
Matt.
He
did not set a record for achieving merit badges. He always says he was the least achieving Eagle Scout. Like, he only did...
You got to get a couple.
Right. And, you have to do a certain amount of work, but I have not seen any not skills or... He hasn't built any fires or anything at our house that would exemplify.
You changed light bulbs.
But I have a question for you, Matt. I know merit badges have evolved over the years. A couple years ago, I taught a yoga class to some Girl Scouts so they could get a yoga patch. They didn't have a yoga patch, 30 years ago.
Sure.
So you've hit 137, but what if they add one on? Are you going to have to go get that one then later?
Nope. So I guess that's a really good question. I've been asked that. So what I've accomplished was all 137.
Every badge possible.
In 2017.
Oh, okay, so you got in the year.
I turned 18.
So
yeah,
do you know this, Matt, that a lot of astronauts, presidents, really important people have been Eagle Scouts? Do you have aspirations to do something like that?
I wish. I really do.
Yeah, what do you want to do with your life, Matt? Obviously, you're a failure. What do you want to do with your life?
Well, I guess I do really want to do something big. I do. But I'm actually going to college here this fall, actually, because I'm graduating high school here in spring. I'm going to school for law enforcement.
Oh, God bless. Good for you, man. Good for you. Dave, I'd say hi to our Eagle Scout record holder. He got every merit badge you could.
I'm so impressed, man. And I was a scout. I was never close to being an Eagle Scout. And the big problem I had was the knots. I couldn't get through the knots. How many different kinds of knots did you have to master?
Oh, about 20, I know for sure for the one merit badge,
Hey, Dave, it's not bugling.
Pioneering merit badge.
Well, I didn't bugle either.
Yeah, they wouldn't let you near a bugle.
20 different kinds of knots.
Another impressive thing is that you have sold $10,000 worth of that popcorn. I love when those Boy Scouts...
That's an amazing statistic. You started raising $500 a year for his troop. By the time he was 12 years old, you were selling 10 grand worth of popcorn every year.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It was,
You know what you ought to do, honestly? I'm not kidding about this. College, great. Go to college. But when you get out of college, regardless of what your employment opportunities are, you need to be a merit badge consultant, because we live in an era where parents will pay for anything.
Coaching.
And you be a merit badge coach, you would make a killing.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Write it down, Matt. It's my gift to you as most valuable person on the planet.
Thank you.
Hey, it's great talking to you. Congratulations. You're really an impressive guy. Keep it up.
Thank you so much.
All right, hold the line.
One of my favorite Eagle Scout stories of my husband's is his father was...
By the way, I should say again, your husband, Pat Boyle, NBC Sportsnet Chicago.
This
now?
That's true. His dad was a doctor, and they weren't an outdoorsy type family. On one of the camping trips, they kind of said after one night that, you know, Mike, his dad, had to get back to the hospital, and they drove, and then they stayed at a hotel, and it was the same highway that all the kids from the campground were going to take the next day. So when they were leaving the hotel, they were seeing the other Eagle Scouts with their families leaving.
Hey, we got to go.
And Pat was scared to death that he was going to get, you know, caught in the, because his dad made him leave.
Did he hide?
He did hide.
Did he get a merit badge for ducking?
Yeah, but he did do the full project. You know, I think he painted a building and stuff like that. And he is a very amazing husband, but he's not very.
Blah, blah, blah. I love him. Well, I
put up the Christmas tree. I take down the Christmas tree.
There should be a merit badge for husbands, don't you think?
Yeah.
A husband merit badge?
Yeah, yeah, should be.
Yeah, but it'd all be administered by your team, and we'd never get it.
But the qualities of a...
You'd get it and it'd be such a low bar.
Yeah.
Didn't disappoint me a lot today. Here's a badge.
Exactly.
Take the garbage out. Here's a badge.
Except we'd have to sew on the badges. That'd be the worst part.
That's what... This kid's mom had a...
Oh,
man. She had sew them all on?
Yeah. Sewing those badges onto my kids' sashes, which both of them never made.
He's got to wear clothes that look like the biggest sellout in NASCAR history. 137 patches.
I mean,
all
I don't
over.
Know. Well, then they
glue
them.
You can glue them too, though.
Can you? My mom used to like get so for our brownie badges would just sit in a bag.
Oh, I still have them.
And then
all.
She'd need to have a beer and a cigarette in order to sew one on. That's what she always said.
And a glass of wine.
A beer and a cigarette badge. Yeah. Yeah. That should be a badge.
Dave, I don't want you to feel bad because I quit after Cub Scouts.
Me did too. You really?
Yeah.
You and me both.
You were a Cub Scout as well?
I went to one Cub Scout meeting. I don't know that qualifies for being a Cub Scout, but I went to one meeting.
So you got an attendance credit.
I was like, yeah, and this is not happening.
Pat, were you a Cub Scout?
No, my dad said, no way in hell am I going to any of those meetings.
Oh, what a sweet father-son story.
Like, hey, Boy Scouts was a lot more fun than Girl Scouts.
You want to go to the football game this weekend? I'll take you, but we ain't going to Cub Scout camp.
What a sweet, sweet time. For you kids wondering, he's not kidding. That's how parents used to parent. It's 7:29.
Old days.
Back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
7:41. Bridget Gaines here. Eric Adelstein and Pat Brady. We probably should do some credits here. Bridget, tell everybody what you do.
So I'm on the Cook County Board.
Mm-hmm.
And
which one are you?
I'm the best one. No.
I'm the cool one.
I represent the 10th District, North Side. So, yeah.
All right. And Eric, you're not on the Cook County Board.
I am not.
He aspires to be.
I aspire to be someday. Yes. I look up to being Commissioner Gaynor.
And and your company is called?
AL Media.
Work with a bunch of Democrats, don't you?
We do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how's your year so far?
It's good. You know, we were down in Mexico for a few days. I was looking to see where they could put this wall. And can I just... This is amazing. I did not realize that border is big.
Yeah.
And there's like rivers Hills. And water and...
Two words, Rio Grande.
I'm no engineer, Steve, but geez, I don't know.
Seems problematic.
Yeah,
it's not Rio Mini.
No, it's Rio Grande. That's it.
Well, the wall now is down to basically Tinker Toy stuck in the sand. The last description I saw.
I don't need concrete. I don't need steel. I need Nerf. Just give me Nerf coast to coast. Pat, what's your company?
Next Generation Strategies, Government Affairs.
And there's also something called the Lincoln Forum, where you try to have decent civil conversations with opposing views and try to get some stuff done.
Yes, we have a big mayor debate coming up February 7th.
Speaking of the mayor's race, Bridget Gaynor, the woman that should have run, what's your take on how this is developing?
Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, we were talking today when we came in that Dorothy Brown might not make it onto the ballot. A couple other smaller candidates might fall off the ballot. And so, you know, as it hones down either through ballot challenges or, you know, people's ability to put it together, you know, we're starting to see it shape up. But we were just talking here. There's the large number of white male candidates. So can they get into the runoff? And then you got Tony and Susanna, who are front runners. So it's shaping up to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, full disclosure, Eric, you guys work with Susanna Mendoza.
We do.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on the big picture?
I think it's the way Bridget said it. I mean, I you know, Daly, by virtue of his name and the amount of money he's raised, I think, you know, if you had a top tier, I think it would be Preckwinkle, Mendoza, and Daly. You know, obviously only two make the runoff if no one gets
50%. Who's the sleeper? Who's the sleeper that people aren't...
I think Amaya Enya is impressive. Sure. I think she has yet to put the kind of money together that you need to communicate. You know, Lori Lightfoot, who I've known forever, who I have a ton of respect for, you know, who in many ways showed a lot of energy and maybe was an impetus, one of the impetus for the mayor maybe making a decision not to do this. But, you know, again, when you have a multi-candidate field like this, it is unpredictable. And really, the leader of the field is undecided at this point in the race. And, you know, then you drop this Burke corruption thing.
I didn't hear about that. What happened?
Yeah, so apparently, I was out of town, but apparently there was some story going on.
Are you surprised at all the Democrats who have jumped off the Burke boat this fast?
No, I'm not. So. Are you?
They were dying to, you know, they deferred to him, never said a word, and then they couldn't wait to line up to step on his neck
right
in front of a microphone.
I just, because I know he knows everything that's gone on in the city.
I see what you're saying.
As you project down the road a little bit, you go, you really want to throw him out this fast? Yeah. You really want to get on the side of he sucks, put him in jail?
I heard you earlier talking about how much money he'd given to all the other aldermen.
Yeah.
And I remind that Mark Hanna, the William McKinley strategist, said there's only two things that matter in politics, money, and I can't remember the other one. You know, and Burke certainly understood that calculus.
Yeah, that's not the Chicago way. That's the politics way, yeah, right?
Right, exactly.
All right, so Pat, to you as well on the mayor's race, what's the number? What do you think the minimum is to get in the runoff? Is it 10%? Is it 12%? Don't look at them. It's a test. Don't look at them for your answer.
See.
Right. Well, what was the poll? The poll
that was
that's what you would always guess when you didn't have study for the test.
Go see.
CABBAGE.
I think the poll that came out before the Edberg story, but I think the front runner was 12%, 11%.
Yeah.
So it does seem like that the number is going to be a small number because of all of the candidates.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're in the mid-20s, it's certainly 30%, you're a lock for the runoff. I think in the mid-20s.
You think somebody will get 30 in that field?
No, I don't at this point.
What about turnout? We had a great turnout for the midterms.
I think you'll have an aggressive turnout. And again, I think that's an unpredictable variant because, again, you know, we talk about it all the time on the show. You can only model a turnout based on past elections you try to predict. But, you know, funny thing happens when the voters get involved. And the other thing I say is, you know,
this is guest of the year. If you don't let her speak, this is your last stop here, buddy.
So all right, I'll be very quick. This is the first really contested open mayor's race in maybe a generation. I mean, I know it was when Daly quit, but Rahm kind of locked up all the support very quickly. So this is very wide open.
I have a question about demographics. You mentioned, Bridget, just this concept of, you know, the four white guys or, I mean, how important is demographic politics to get into the runoff? Willie Wilson has just been pretty transparent about the idea that he wants to challenge every African-American on the ballot because he wants the African-American vote. Is that the way that you have to strategize if you're a candidate right now? Is it trying and win in gender or in race politics?
Look, politics always, regardless of demographics, is what's your base? And then can you get your... You have to win your base, and then you have to at least come in second in a couple of others. And so your base lines up to people who have things in common with you, and race is a huge thing that they have in common because it also comports to where do you live and maybe the issues that you care about. So, you know, I think that's going to drive it, but I think turnout is also going to be driven by the fact that we have about 27 contested aldermanic races. So those people might come out to run, you know, to elect their aldermen as much as they're going to come out to elect mayor.
Bill Daly wanted to take the number of aldermen down to like 3.
Oh.
Is it 15? Was 15, that the number?
From 50 to 15. And he also wants to eliminate the local school councils from 500 local school councils, which per school, to 60. Which would be kind of
this goes to my overriding theory of politics. Those who benefit from the rules have to make the rules. So wouldn't the aldermen decide if they were going to eliminate those other aldermen?
You know, this has been an issue that's come up many times, you know, because Chicago's got a much bigger city council. New York's is a fraction of our size, and they're, you know, much bigger.
Three guys named Vinny.
Yeah. So, you know, but I don't think having a smaller number leads to more or less democracy. And in this city, the traditions around what ward you're from, I mean, I feel that way, having grown up here. It feels like I don't understand what the accomplishment is. Because you don't save that much money and people don't have access to the system.
What I will say, whatever the size is, and I think the argument on the Burke stuff and most of the corruption that's gone on with the city council is a function of something called aldermanic prerogative, mm-hmm. which no other city, big city, has in the world, which is basically means the local alderman controls zoning and building. It means the city has trouble planning because it can't be centralized, and it leads to this kind of corruption where every alderman is basically king or queen of their domain in terms of who gets to build, who gets to open businesses, and all that kind of stuff. You want to do something about reform, you got to get rid of aldermanic prerogative.
But don't you think if you made that a smaller number that would exacerbate that problem, that you would have more kings and queens in that regard?
If you kept prerogative for sure. Yeah, for sure.
When we come back, the president's calling. Listen, we haven't talked about him. That's why he's calling. He wants to make sure he's a part of this this last segment. And
Number is almost like the Fox and Friends number.
It is.
One off.
Yeah, sometimes he calls and goes, are the others in? Because I don't like you.
Deucey?
I think he said Deucey. He sounded like Deucey.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
All right, we're standing by for a call from the president. At least I'm told he's calling. I don't know. It could be just an idle threat from the White House.
He's got a lot going on.
Pat, answer this for Republican perspective on the Democrats. Are you surprised the Democrats have not had a better way to handle this shutdown? And is there a better way to handle it from a Democrat's perspective?
Yeah.
Oops. Try your mic.
I don't think anybody looked particularly good the other night with the address to the nation. But to me, the storm clouds on the horizon for the Democrats are, and I've made my views on the president clear, but they have got a problem with the progressive left. Some of the stuff I heard in the last week about the 70% marginal rate, and then it was topped at 90%, and the face of the party being this young woman from Brooklyn. I mean, that's way out of, I think, mainstream, and the Democrats are going to have to deal with that.
Are they? I just wonder if that's just a play. Is that a Republican play? Because you're seeing now that they're just picking on this one young woman from New York City as trying to make her the face of the Democrats so they can cut her down. It's weird. I don't know.
Even Whoopi Goldberg, because I was watching The View the other day.
That's my favorite thing,
which I do every day, said it's time for her to maybe sit back and learn. But she's been I don't think it's the Republicans going after. I think she's made a lot of her own problems by making statements like this.
Yeah. What do you guys say as Democrats? Do you at all consider...
Well, answer the Republican piece of it so I can flip this. Because the Republican piece of it, are you surprised the way the Republicans have handled this? And are you comfortable with the way the Democrats have handled it?
Comfortable? No. But there's the adage that when your opponents are destroying themselves, get out of the way. And I think that Republicans, and particularly Trump, just look horrible. And I think that's why you're seeing these Senate Republicans now a little bit panicked that this seems like a personal peak on the president's part and has nothing to do with governing. Now,
there's like eight now.
The longer fence. Discussion of the face of the Democratic Party and leadership. What I will tell you is, you know, it's the classic case, and I've started to see some research out of the early primary states. The national narrative on, oh, Democratic Party split, and you got this left and right, that's not where the voters are. Mm-mm. They're like, we want to beat Trump. We want someone who's going to get something done. We want someone who's going to lower the temperature, bring some civility back, and fight for some things. And
I completely agree with that, but that's not the voters. That's her problem, and they don't have her under control is the wrong way to put it, but she's out there, and she's a national... She had 1.6 million Twitter followers.
Right.
So it's almost like our version of the Tea Party.
Right.
The things they say are just out of the mainstream.
Yeah, but look, you have Nancy Pelosi, who's at the helm of the Democratic Party, and I think if there was ever anyone for right now at this moment... She is very measured. She's not being flustered at all by what's happening out of the White House.
Said some funny things, too, this week.
She's kind of owning it right now. And this whole thing of, like, I think she looks at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the woman who kind of said the whole thing about impeaching and
the mother
swore,
effer woman.
And yeah. I think she's like, okay, do your thing. I'm absolutely focused like a laser beam, and I'm going to keep... Because, look, nothing like an upper 70-year-old woman who knows exactly what Donald Trump is doing. She's like, I've been dealing with this nonsense my entire life from every single man
I've
ever dealt with.
As the leader, as a juxtaposition to McConnell, who has disappeared completely, what would be wrong for her in her position to say, look, I don't like it. I'm not going to be the babysitter of everybody in my caucus in the House, but I don't like the language. I know she said something to that effect.
She did.
But at least come out publicly a little more strongly than she did.
Yeah, but why should she beat up her own people? She said...
Well, just because it doesn't help.
No, because well, she said, look, that's not my, I'm of a different generation, and that kind of language I don't really appreciate. And I think she probably talked to them in private. But why should she hand the Republicans a soundbite of them fighting amongst themselves?
But you guys believe that? Because I don't believe mother effer is generational. I think that's character.
But can I talk about the other point? Because I think this dismissal of higher marginal tax rates.
Right. I'll hold that thought because I just heard Trump's not calling.
Okay. I'm sorry.
So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to wrap this up because I have another question for you. In an era of visual acuity and imagery never being more important in politics.
Can you spell acuity?
No. Another context? I don't even know if that's okay. Correct. Did you throw up on your shoes when you saw Chuck and Nancy in the hallway? Stand by. We'll come back with that, too, at 7:57. The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where you'll find Steve in just a moment. Isn't that right, Steve?
Yes. That's correct, yes.
Yes, that's what I thought. When we come back in 720 WGN. Just got a couple of minutes. There's a really riveting tax argument going on in the studio right now that has got us all on pins and needles. All right, Eric, you were saying.
Pat is losing his mind over here because he's confusing, okay, well, he's confusing growth with wealth. And the history of tax rate cuts is that it puts more money in rich people's pockets. It does zero for productivity or middle class wage increase. Zero.
Pat, Eric was asleep in the 80s when we cut the rates from 70 to 40% for the high. Everybody got a cut, and we had 25 years of uninterrupted economic growth. I agree with you on the deficits, and the Republicans fell down there. But if the Democrats want to argue higher tax rates
for wealthy people,
wealthy people.
Because
you're going to have a 90% tax rate for anybody that's making over $1 million?
No, it was 10 million.
She was looking for 70.
Over 10 million.
Either way, what do you think that's going to do to this country?
Well, it
they don't give 90% of their income. When it's a 90% tax rate, you're not paying 90% of your income.
I understand marginal tax rates.
Republicans have trouble understanding progressive tax rates.
No, we understand taxes, and this is the Democrat solution. We want more of your money because we want more government.
No, we want less inequality. See, here's the difference. Republicans think we should have freedom from government. Democrats think we should have freedom from poverty, freedom from fear, freedom from not having health care, freedom from all these other things. That's the difference. And policy can be a big part of that.
What about the argument that why are you penalizing the most successful people that
drive
the economy?
It's not penalizing, it's fairness.
Yeah, 90%
is penalty. That's
fairness
to whom? To the progressive left. That's fair. That's what they deem.
Do you think
fair.
It's fair that a CEO makes 600 times what their employees make? That wasn't the case during the post-war period.
Why is that? Why is that a government problem? Why isn't that a corporation problem?
Why does the government
problem?
Pick winners
well,
and losers?
Well, if you asked Abraham Lincoln, John Adams, Teddy Roosevelt, or any of the best presidents, they would say capitalism's important, but you better have a strong federal government to balance the inequalities to make it fair.
It's not the unfairness of that he makes 600 times more. Is it fair that he makes 600 times more and the guy that's working doesn't have health care? And it lives at a moment of desperation.
Well, how's the government health care gone so far with Obamacare? I'll use myself.
Well, Medicare is maybe the most successful government
exactly,
program of all time.
Exactly, but let's do what we just did with Obamacare. My rates that I pay for myself have doubled, and I've lost my doctor. So we're going to have another government take of Medicare for all, this Cortezo teaser. That's where we're going to have a government-run health care. That hasn't worked anywhere, including the UK and including Canada.
Well, we pay more for health care in this country and get less for it than any other civilized country in the world.
The government takeover solution that Obamacare was hasn't worked, and that was supposed to have market incentives in it. And the left position is
it worked for 20 million people getting coverage who didn't have it before.
Right. I mean,
it didn't
work. My sister's a doctor in West Virginia. She has a population of people that have always been employed and just never worked anywhere with health care. So she has people coming to her that haven't seen a doctor in a decade because now they, for the very first time, they actually don't have to live like some sort of savage who always worries that something horrible is going to happen.
Nobody's against people getting health care. That's great. But the reality is the government takeover of health care is a big loser. Eric, you and I have talked about
this. First of all, it's not a government takeover.
Yeah,
that's a Republican talking. It's not a government takeover.
You just changed
it. It's not a government takeover, Pat, at all. How is it a government takeover? Saying that that private insurers need to provide insurance and can't take it away if you have a pre-existing condition is not a government takeover.
That's the big lie of the campaign.
I'm going to have to ask you to each have one last 10-second comment.
20 more minutes.
Pat, you go first. Your last comment.
I'm so frustrated the years that I've been with Bridget and Eric, and I've tried to teach them. I'm a disappointed parent.
Something happened to Pat in the Cayman Islands where the Republicans planted that. They must have planted that button that said,
"Regulator."
Like, here are the 2019 talking points, Pat. You must rephrase them.
He may have had a regulator problem. You know the Republicans and regulations. Yeah, right? Right? Am I right? Bridget, Cook County, you'll update us on Cook County next time you're on.
Next time I'm on.
Okay. President Trump is coming up.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, it's more on entertainment. You know I love you more than one night. There he is, live at Channel 9. So, Dean, let me ask you a question that's on everybody's mind. A tense nation waits with bated breath. Does Jeff Bezos have a prenup? That's what we're all wondering this morning.
Well, that's everyone's wondering that. The people who are in, quote, in the know, you know, sources say.
Mm-hmm.
That he doesn't.
104. He's worth 143 million or so.
It's not going to be a problem
billion,
because they're very similar to the Paltrow Chris Martin uncoupling. They are still going to be best friends. It says.
I don't see the friendship going to the point where he says, "Just take your $67 billion and enjoy life." I don't see that happening. I don't know.
The press release, Dean, didn't it seem like they are really the truly.
It does seem like they're the it's very of friends. Extremely amicable.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I mean, who's going to put out a press release and go, "I can't believe he cheated on me"?
Well,
that's not a press release.
Usually, Dean, I think you would support this. When it's bad, they say, "Respect our privacy, please." About this. This was very, hey, we're just in a different era and now we're just going to be friends.
I'm just not, listen, maybe it's coincidence, but front page deal on Amazon this morning, prenups. Prenups, you can get a sweet deal on them. Plus, if you're a Prime member, Dean, you can have a lawyer deliver it overnight. what else is on the list when we come back from this quick break?
Oh, we're going to talk more about the Oscars, and there is somebody who says they're interested in being the host, who has hosted before. So we'll get to that coming up. Mm-hmm. Two other artists have come out against R. Kelly in the news today. But maybe my biggest story today is a celebrity all-star cruise that you can be part of. You hear, you know, especially on WGN, you hear, you know, all the big name celebrities on WGN are, you know, always.
Everybody's going on a trip. Dave's got one coming up. Dave's trip sold out in like 4 minutes.
It did.
I've done several myself. They're big fun, but not this one is celebrity. This one is like celebrities time 10.
Wow. Oh, very interesting.
Can I come?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sure. All whatever right. you need, Super Joe. It's a Super Joe cruise. It's on the Fox River.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
Back to Dean at Channel 9. So the Oscars decision is made or still up in the air?
Well, sources are saying that it's going to be a hostless show. That has not been confirmed by the Oscars yet. But the show is February 24th. It's 6 weeks away.
Yeah, we don't have time to plan
somebody's
this.
Somebody's got to say something one way or the other about all of this. And what these sources, you know, supposed insiders are saying is that they'll have a small handful of A-listers who will, you know, introduce certain segments of the show, and that's it. But not a traditional monologue, you know, not the usual host.
Well, somebody brought up this morning, Time Saver.
Oh, big time. I'm 100% for this.
But having said that, I think a lot of people tune in for the opening segment and then maybe don't come back till the end, or maybe they bail completely.
It's probably going to be very different this year. Mm-hmm. That said, Kevin Hart has definitely said that he was out. He was on Stephen Colbert last night, and I'm told not very conciliatory about the whole thing. I didn't see it, but I was told that he's gone back to, you know, I'm the victim of you know, this whole thing. Yeah. Chris Rock has said that he definitely does not want to do it. But Whoopi Goldberg has stepped forward. Who hosted four times. The last time was in 2001. Did a nice job when she did it. And she said, I would be up for doing it. I would do it. No one's asked me. And I'm probably the last person on anyone's list. But she said that she would do it. So we'll see if that happens or if it remains a hostless affair.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that while you continue. And you tell us what's going on with R. Kelly.
So a couple of pretty big names have come out against R. Kelly yesterday. Common the rapper and actor, who said that just like everyone else, he got swept into this whole thing in defending R. Kelly, and he is now saying that he apologizes for that. He thinks that the allegations would have been taken more seriously if the victims were not black. He says that the victims were let down by the justice system and also by the black community, who were all tied up in loving R. Kelly, trying to defend him, loving his music, that pretty much everyone failed the victims of all of this. Lady Gaga also came out last night and apologized for a performance that she did with R. Kelly. There was a song called Do What You Do that was on the American Music Awards in 2013. She has pulled that performance from iTunes, from all streaming services. She says the sexual abuse allegations in the docuseries that everyone's talking about are horrifying and indefensible. She has talked many times about being a victim of sexual assault herself, and says that anyone who is making these claims, any victim, should be listened to and should be taken very seriously.
She obviously could have missed the memo on this, but certainly everybody in the music business was not completely shocked by all of this coming out. So there are a lot of people who did look the other way. And Justin, as you said earlier, Dee Regattas has been screaming about this for years.
Decades. I worked with Jim on this story for a couple of years. And even before that, I was thinking about this yesterday. I think it was 2002. When was his trial? His trial.
Been a while.
But at that time, stories were coming forward about how his relationship with his former high school, relationship with some people in Chicago, South Side, that younger women that were underage. And I mean, this isn't a new story for Chicago.
By 2008, he was acquitted of pornography case.
Yeah, so that's still 10, 11 years.
The start of that story, though? That was a long period. Remember that? That was
the lead up to the trial.
Yeah. It's just amazing to me that, and that's what the Chicago Magazine today, or this the one that's coming out.
2001.
Says, yeah, it's 17 years of Dee Regattas reporting.
Yeah, that's when he got the sex tape.
There are a lot of stories about R. Kelly, the anecdotal stories from Chicagoans that will tell you he was up to no good a long time ago, before the music industry even turned its head toward it.
I find so fascinating, and maybe it's because we live in a Me Too world now, but that these allegations have been out there for a long time, and pretty much everyone turned a blind eye to it. Bill Cosby, Kevin Spacey, Weinstein, name the celebrity that was accused, whose careers instantly ended.
Yeah,
before anybody went to trial, before there was a shred of legal evidence, and people were shut down. How interesting that now these allegations are taken very seriously and acted upon by people instantly. And this case has been going on, as we said, for 17 years.
I think Common is right. I think that it has to do a lot with the victims. These are not high profile, unfortunately, kids, that are... They I remember when the trial was going on, they gave excuses to a lot of these girls. Well, they left their home. They were like runaways. They weren't quite the... if it had been a...
As if some way that devalues their
circumstance.
Right,
a 16-year-old girl from Winnetka,
ridiculous.
Went and moved in with him, maybe. Yeah,
and there was always anecdotal stories about the families involved, that there was,
they were
payoffs
money.
And things like that. So that was always the case, and that was all came out during the trial that was back in the 2000s.
And the awfulness of this story continues, but the payoff discussion also continues, including with people involved with the documentary. So I don't know. There's a lot to get to the bottom. Criminally, is he still on the hook here, Dean?
That's going to be up to Kim Fox. And people did come forward when she asked people to come forward if they had anything to say. A couple of people did come forward with new allegations. We don't know details about any of that. He's denied all the allegations. He and his lawyers went on all the TV shows yesterday and denying everything.
What's this giant celebrity cruise you were talking about?
Well, Steve, we're going to...
Is this a honey of a deal?
It's pretty great, is all I can say. And I was thinking we maybe need to do something like this for the Moron Awards.
Oh, okay.
Because this is fantastic.
The Moron Cruise.
It's called the Barry Williams Primetime Rewind.
Is this a MeTV thing?
No, okay. It's not. It's not affiliated.
Barry Williams, Greg, From the Brady Bunch.
Oh, okay.
Greg Brady.
Okay.
It's a cruise going to Grand Cayman, Costa Maya, and Cozumel.
So far, so good.
Greg Brady, of course, is on it, but Willie Ames from Charles in Charge. Greg Evigan from BJ and the Bear. Kathy Garver, I think she was Sissy, the older sister, on Family Affair.
Wait a minute, did they get the bear,
yes,
too, or just Greg Evigan?
Just Greg. Okay. Just Greg Evigan.
I was in love with Willie Ames.
Jerry Mathers, the beaver, will be on this.
He's aged okay, Mayor. I'm looking at a picture of him.
Jerry Mathers?
Yeah. No, Willie Ames. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm still on Willie.
Butch Patrick, Eddie Munster, will be on this. John Schneider, Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, poor John Schneider.
Jimmy J.J. Walker. Imagine being trapped on a boat for
was just somebody
days.
Yelling dynamite.
Right.
Willie Ames was on one of those sites. Is he dead or alive? So he fell off.
Yeah, well, I understand that. Yeah.
Apparently alive. Don Wells from Gilligan's Island, and there's many more. Those are, you know, just some of the big names that'll be.
Do you have any idea what it'll cost for me to be on this cruise?
I did not look up the cost, but if you go to ClassicTVStarCruise.com,
boy, you bet I will.
You can get all the details. It's November 8th through 14th of next year.
Perfect for me.
Yeah.
ClassicTVStar.com. Do you think they'll sign autographs?
How much money do you have?
I'm not seeing any pricing here right now.
All right, well, we'll get to the bottom of it.
But they promise to provide you with a unique entertainment experience, bringing you together with community like-minded enthusiasts to relive your favorite moments.
Well, there's got to be some sort of record setting there, Dean. The most B and C stars on the sea together at one time. I mean, come on.
B and C on the sea?
Yeah, B on the sea, or maybe D on the sea.
How did Steve Bertrand travel not snag a group like this? For
big miss.
It looks
big
like they're
miss.
Looking for partners, travel agent partners, so maybe he can still get
he
in.
May be on the phone with them right now.
Yeah.
Thank you, buddy.
See you.
See you tomorrow. And headlines are next on 720 WGN. I changed my ringtone. What do you guys think?
I like it.
It's so good.
I don't care for it. I
feel like I should be on a horse.
Yeah. Oh, he's on the line. Mr. President, good morning.
Hi-yo, Silver. Away.
Look, let's get after it here.
20 days into the shutdown, Cochran, I still have a huge supply of Diet Coke in the White House kitchen. Hashtag blessed.
Yeah, and meanwhile, some federal workers, they're not feeling blessed. They're pinched. No pay. It's starting to really affect people.
You know, I know you guys like to focus on the bad news, okay? But I have some great news that just came across my desk. Pizza Hut is going to start delivering beer later this month.
Well, that's not...
I know Justice Kavanaugh is very excited about that.
So maybe he'll come visit. Look, it doesn't look like you got any closer to an agreement with the Democrats yesterday. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer said you threw tantrums and you stormed out of the meeting.
That's absolutely ridiculous. Fake news. Lazy eyelid Chucky got it totally wrong once again. I never stormed out of the meeting. I just confidently got up and calmly left the room after one of my Big Macs started repeating. That was a total humanitarian move on my part.
Well, you can't do the right thing occasionally,
really,
I suppose.
Was.
Speaking of humanitarian, we caught your address to the nation on Tuesday night about this alleged crisis at the border. Can you get my 9 minutes of life back?
It was a tremendous speech, Cochran. It really was. Bigly ratings. Mm. My address was so successful, it was translated into multiple languages. Did you know that?
I didn't know.
Spanish, Chinese, and CNN. I don't know what the hell they're saying on CNN. You know CNN, don't you, Cochran?
You have the Rosetta Stone.
Yeah. And not only did I take my case for the wall directly to the American people, I got to preempt Ellen's terrible show, Game of Games, on NBC. You're welcome, America. I did you a favor, believe me.
You know, that's one thing we can agree on. But in the meantime, Democrats say you're making this whole thing up. There's no crisis.
Hey, when it comes to the southern border, at least I'm manufacturing the crisis in the good old U.S. of A. Made in America. See, I told you I'd bring back manufacturing.
Did you watch Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer's rebuttal in that weird hallway shot they had?
You know, frankly, when they first came on screen, I thought they had replaced Alex Trebek in one of those Colonial Penn life insurance commercials. Seriously, they have all the emotional appeal of an autopsy. I just wish those two would do the Bird Box challenge in rush hour traffic someday.
Well,
you know what I mean?
That's terrible. Let me get you back on topic here. The crisis at the border. There isn't one.
Wrong. It's a huge crisis, because unless we get $5.7 billion for our beautiful wall, the baddest of the bad hombres will be here passing out heroin lollipops on the playgrounds and attacking our women in their Pilates classes.
Like, if you're not going to answer, let me switch topics. The Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, the guy in charge of the Mueller investigation. So Rosenstein says he's leaving when Attorney General Barr is confirmed, assuming he will be. I mean, what's the story there?
Look, I will tell you, General Zod Rosenstein has been such a tremendous asset to the Justice League. He really has. I completely respect Rosenstein, and I never would draw a fake mustache and spectacle on his picture hanging in the Justice Department lobby while no one was looking.
I think I saw that shot. One more thing before we go. We heard more from the Vice President yesterday, Vice President Pence. After your meeting with Chuck and Nancy went south, Pence stayed in the room, asked them to negotiate on behalf of dealing with a shutdown. So how do you feel? Is Mike Pence doing a good job?
He's a tough cookie. Mike Pence, are you doing a good job negotiating with congressional leaders regarding the government shutdown?
Only if you tell me I am, my liege.
Mike, you're doing a tremendous job.
I'm doing a tremendous job negotiating with congressional leaders. Thank you for asking, my liege.
Let me tell you something. Mike Pence may look all Johnny Hayseed on the outside, but on the inside, he's an animal. He's an animal. Isn't that right, Mike?
That's correct, sir. I'm a vicious predator. By the way, I took the liberty of putting your Diet Coke with ice on a doily on a silver service tray in the Roosevelt room, sir.
What'd I tell you? Pence is a killer. He's a total killer.
Thanks for calling, Mr. President.
Later, loser.
That's my favorite. Later, loser.
It's amazing that Pence is always with him when he calls.
I want that T-shirt. Is Trump selling T-shirts yet?
Later, loser. Later, would be a loser. Great, you know what? That'd be a great T-shirt.
If there's
exactly
anything
right.
That's be taken away from the Trump presidency when you look at legacy, I hope that that phrase sticks.
Later, loser.
Later, yeah. Loser.
Yeah. That could be the title of his new primetime series once he's impeached.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
It's I-49, swap meet after 9 o'clock. Walter Jacobson, Andrea Darlis, Bartolini's gift card to give away. We've got a lot to do, but Justin, who's here now?
I don't know, some guy who I think cleans the
we should put him on then.
When we're,
we should put him on if he's cleaning
Mark Baser,
the office.
Mark Baser is a longtime host of the interview show. Season 4 begins tonight on Channel 11, 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock.
Get your mic on. That might help.
The interview show now in its 11th season at the Hideout, just free to go and to.
Well, not free.
It's free. I mean,
not
it's five
free.
Bucks.
I mean, free.
Bucks,
yeah,
it's free for me when I go.
That's true. It's free just for you.
People.
But Mark is
everybody
bucks.
Else subsidizes Justin.
Yeah. $5 is practically free.
Mark is a longtime journalist in town, and he does a show at the interview or a show at the Hideout called the Interview Show. It's 11 years and 4 years on TTW. He tapes the show. It's great.
Did he interview you?
Yeah, I've been. I am. You know who I am? I'm his Chris Elliott.
You're the go-to guy if somebody cancels?
Yeah, no, I'm the guy that he'll do a comedy bit with at the top of it.
You
that
see.
The crowd goes, meh, and then he does.
I thought every
really
interview show, as you know,
guest,
Mark, you need a emergency break glass because somebody cancels like a half an hour before the show. I just figured Justin was your guy.
Justin's been Mike Ditka.
Yeah,
you've been a fantasy sports aficionado slash neophyte.
Right.
You've been yourself many times.
Yeah, I've been
really are the go-to guy.
I've been sort of a Mark Giangreco. We did the Giangreco Davies kind of thing for the New Year's Eve show that one time.
See, that's why I'm glad you don't do nights anymore.
Right.
Because when you were doing nights, I couldn't get you.
Right,
and then we'd just have an empty seat for 15 minutes during the show, and it was really boring.
You're leading off the season with who?
We've got tonight on TV, we've got Michael Wilbon from ESPN, Party
great,
Interruption.
Great dude.
And Mekhi McRaven, who's jazz guy. He's amazing. His album's out, Universal Beings.
Sure.
It was on a number of Best of the Year.
What are you interested in everything? Is there somebody you won't book? Is there a category
I'm not
you won't
interested
touch?
In fish. I'm not interested in fish.
So no fishermen?
No fishermen. Or, well, fish. I'll have the fishermen.
Oh, no fish.
But no fish.
That
yeah.
seems right. That seems right.
Yeah, it's kind of a general show. Hopefully, I describe it, and this is pretentious, I know, somewhere like a cross between like a late night talk show and Terry Gross. I used to say Charlie Rose, and then
that's
I stopped saying
right.
that.
Right. You know, smart. You saying pretentious and WTTW in the same breath. I mean, come on.
But yeah, but I mean, usually pretentious carries a little bit more money with it, doesn't it?
Well, maybe charge $650 for the tickets. Who do you want to plug coming up this season?
We got Ethan Hawke.
Oh, he's a good dude.
Yeah, he was great. He told a great story about years ago being in New York City right after Dead Poets Society came out, and he and one of his co-stars was were eating dinner at an Italian restaurant in Greenwich Village, and all of a sudden everybody in the restaurant got up and stood on their tables like the end scene.
Oh, that's cool. Society. Yeah. Yeah. That's very cool.
And that was the best part of the interview, and I just ruined it.
Remember, spoiler alert right before you say it. Amber?
What is a... Sorry.
Oh,
go ahead,
that's okay. No, no, no. You go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what's the biggest difference for you to... Because you'll do the show at the Hideout, and it's live, and then what's the difference for what we see when we go there and what actually is on the air?
Sure. I just cut out the stupid things I say. And then that's pretty much it. That takes about an hour and a half off the show, and then we have a nice episode.
You should have someone else edit then. You know, so
I know it's the worst.
You'd be in the show more.
It's the worst.
So I assume you do more live shows than episodes end up on television.
Kind of. We do. No. Actually, the answer is no.
Okay.
We do less because we can get a lot of stuff packed into... I have no budget, so I can get a lot of stuff packed into one live night. So I do a live night for, like, you know, 9 hours. We'll have Justin come on and several different characters. Like, Justin's actually playing Ethan Hawke. We don't actually...
Right now?
No.
I never get in the show. I don't get in the show, the TV show. I always end up on
That's
the
not true.
Floor.
That's not true. You've been... you were on last season.
I was,
Yeah, we had a sketch where
Which
we
character?
Sat...
No, this was... Was this at the bar?
Yeah, we did two at the bar. Yeah.
Are you a credited extra?
I'm a credited sketch writer, right?
You are.
Is that what it is?
You
are. So you can
you
see
have
me on
credits.
The show.
No
big
deal, huh? So you can register that with the writers union.
SAG after.
Put it on your CV, as we say.
That's right.
And what were you doing before you started doing this? I mean, I know you're
just
doing comedy around town, but how do you get the show?
So there was a show called Funny Ha Ha. It still goes on at the Hideout, which Claire Zulke and John Green hosted. And I also had a column at Red Eye, and they invited me to come on and read my columns. So this is a true story. I would get on stage, and I would just read my column. The paper would be shaking. And then Justin said to me, he's like, "Kate, come here, buddy. Stop doing that.
Stop shaking,
but put the paper away and just perform." And I'm like, that seems like a lot of work to memorize a bunch of stuff. So then I had the idea that I could just go on and ask questions, and that seemed a lot.
You're the Scorsese of comedy when you said stop shaking and reading.
Come over and sit at the table with me.
Yeah, a lot of cocaine involved.
And, a lot of cocaine.
Yeah.
That's really was what fuels the
live lit scene.
And all of TTW. Yeah, there's no question.
Have you recycled guests from before you started the TV session?
This season we have Gillian Flynn on Gone Girl and Widows, of course.
She's so good.
She's awesome, and she had been on a couple of times just when it was a live show, and now we finally have her on.
Who's your most booked? Who's done the most shows?
The most shows? John Green, actually, who wrote The Fault in Our Stars, and he used to live here in Chicago, knew him back then. And he's
no longer welcome. You've had enough of him.
Nothing else
you can ask him.
He's off this season. No way. Wouldn't have him.
Maybe you, though.
You've been on
a ton. I've been on a lot.
Do you get a jacket? Do you get some sort of logo to anything?
You can have this. Do you want this one?
Not your jacket. Don't give him your jacket.
I get in for free. That's about it.
Okay, well, that's fine. So, save $5 everywhere you can.
It's more than five. Everybody's subsidizing Justin.
Really? Yeah. It's more than five?
I got it up to 15.
Oh, you did? Yeah. I didn't even know that. That's amazing. That's like a real success story for the underground comedy scene in Chicago.
Your,
you got it to 15.
Sure.
Congrats,
that makes your
buddy.
Free entry even more valuable.
Yeah, it's more value. I didn't
it's
even know
It's a golden
that.
Ticket.
Yeah.
He was telling us a story off the air yesterday about not getting in free somewhere and how angry it made him. So
it's the main reason you get into show business. Or free stuff.
Yeah, it's the only reason. You don't have the salary, so you might as well get into... what did I see last night? Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief?
Oh, there you go.
You're going out again.
That's good.
Yeah, impressed the child.
Question for you. You have become, in a way, a big central part of that community at the Hideout. I mean, Funny Ha Ha started it, but because of the interview show, there's now a movement of talk shows and panel shows, and people
kind of
are
pissed
doing
off about it.
Well, rip off.
They're all rip off.
But you are at the center of a community there, and you know they're having a lot of issues right now with the Lincoln Yards behind it, and possibly the Hideout going away at some point. For you to be a center of community, you like that? You like being sort of the face of the Hideout?
You're like the Godfather.
I'm not. Tim Tutton is the Godfather. Or John Langford. It feels weird because when you start off, you're like, there's these people who have been doing it for so long and they've been a part of the Hideout. And then you look back and you're like, wait a minute, I've been doing it for 11 years. And right now, obviously, the Hideout's kind of in the fight of its life, although it had a victory this past week in which they're not going to build a 30,000 seat soccer stadium next to the Hideout, which which I was hoping that I could raise my ticket prices to $20 once the soccer stadium showed up. But
so
it's a good thing.
If you know, in true show business tradition, if there's a threat to lose the venue, you're already prepared to book with somebody else, or you know,
are you thinking about
shopping the show?
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking I would do it on Wabanzia Street, just right there on the alley.
Just do it outside, yeah.
Just right outside, just be like, we used to do it here.
Weather could be an issue.
Oh, you know what? That's, I think about that all the time with live shows. Like, what's the weather going to be like? Are people going to show up? And luckily,
all right, so the
gods have...
The great problem any talk show host has, regardless of how good an interviewer you are...
Yeah.
He's good. He's good.
The one word answers or the two word answers.
Yeah. You know, look at me doing this right now.
It's called.
Yes.
It's when people didn't, you know, it's there's a word for it. It's when people De Niro you. Because
he's the worst.
He's
right?
the worst. He really is. So, out somebody. Who is the worst interview you had on the show? And I don't mean they're bad people.
Yeah.
I just mean they didn't come to play.
You know what I'd say? I'd say avoid, and I love them as people, but avoid alternative cartoonists.
Isn't that a rule we can apply to life? It doesn't have to be just your show.
No, they're nice people. Their stuff is good. They just don't want to talk about it.
Right. So you should try them on the radio.
You have a TV show out of the Hideout. Does everybody there that does a show think that they should all have a TV show as well?
Oh, that's something you'd have to ask them.
In other words, how many people are stabbing you in the back? And
yeah.
The
I mean, again, it's if I were on NBC, that might be a different story.
But right.
I think the people are happy for me.
And it'd be Allison Rosati.
Yeah, right. What I love about The Hideout, and I love about the interview show, is that this was this is organic. This is a show that was on for 7 years. That you would just do it to the crowd that was there. And all of
organic
these
organic and corroding.
I think about Brian Dennehy and others who have come through.
Dennehy's a great story. He did not want to be on the show.
Did not want to be on the show, but they would do it for the audience in the room. There's something organic about it. And you created through your friends and other people, you created your own production team to record these things. It's not like TTW, you know this. TTW is not like, here's a ton of money.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So Mark has some really great people who produce and do cameras for him, but it is homegrown, authentic, the way that they produce it. And I think it's an awesome
success
story.
I want to hear more about Brian Dennehy. How do you get him there if he didn't want to do it?
Well, we put him in a wheelbarrow and just took him over. No, he was doing the Iceman Cometh at the Goodman, and the Goodman I have a good relationship with the Goodman. They wanted to have him on. They thought he'd really like it, and he did end up liking it, but he showed up.
He was grumpy.
He was grumpy, as you would expect, and he showed up, and he said sarcastically, this was just a live show at the time, he says, this ought to sell a lot of tickets to his PR person. And I was right next to him. And then we had a rapper.
Did
great
he know
rapper.
You were the host?
Who knows? I don't know if you knew I was the host when I was up there. And we had a rapper on before him, and it was a great rapper, King Louie. He's pretty well known in Chicago.
Rapper, yeah.
And I said to the PR person, I said, look, I don't know, Brian wants to sit here while I interview the rapper. And she said, Brian, we have a rapper on the first. And he just stood right up and walked upstairs, and there's a little green room upstairs. And I was like, to my wife, I said, Gina, go up there and just entertain.
Charm him.
And she did. And I think we had a great interview, but from what I can tell, they had a better interview.
Have you talked to him since?
We talk weekly now. Yeah.
Yeah, you and Dennehy are tight?
I think at a good time. Once you get on stage, you know somebody like Brian Dennehy, he just wants to.
Yeah, he would never sell it on audience.
He's not the one word answer.
Having said that, there's been more than one occasion where I've told someone, the way this works is you play along, you sell what you sell, and we have a good time. We don't ever have to talk again. Have you ever had that moment?
No, because to Justin's point, people come on, if they're making the trip to the Hideout, they're not making it because they are interested in promoting. They want to promote, but they also want to. They're there because they want to be there.
Right. But you're very nice to say.
But I know that, like, I've done tons of stories, and you're just like, you're not friends with them.
Right.
You know, you can't expect to be. So once in a while, maybe you'll strike up a friendship, but you
can't
go in with
that. How long do you think this is going to go, the Hideout, or the interview show?
Wow, sounds like he's about to cancel it.
Yeah, what's going on?
How long is this going to go?
Yeah.
What's your next idea for him, Justin? Maybe that's what he's waiting for.
No, I wonder, because it went from, for a while there, Mark was doing it every month. And you know, and you're a family man, you got a couple kids, you're getting older, and now you've done it less because it's when the Hideout is, or when you're doing the show for the
I don't have to do it
for
as much.
TTW.
Yeah.
I mean, is that the idea, that you'll just keep doing this?
Every time I think of, and I'm sure you guys relate to this, every time I think of not doing it, quitting, I'm like, I should quit. This is frustrating me. And then I think, wow, I kind of like doing it.
The great problem is, once you give up the platform, you gave up the platform.
I know.
You know, and then you're the guy that used to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the public doesn't go, oh my God, I miss him.
Yeah, I, you
there's
realize
nobody walking
that.
Around. Here's a limit test. There's nobody walking around right now going, I wonder what Dave Letterman's doing today. Yeah. And he had a pretty good run.
That's true. That's true.
So in other words, never give it up. And if you have to take hostages and lock the doors, take it.
I'm lucky. TTW's been great to me, and the Hideouts, I hope the Hideout lives for a while, because I can't imagine doing
it. It's a great show, Steve. I'll take you out there one time.
I saw John Williams do it.
Oh,
yeah. 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 And that's one of the guests you had to throw off. Yeah, that's what I heard. Plug it again. New season?
New season on WTTW, Channel 11, starts tonight at 10 p.m. Michael Wilbon from ESPN and Micaiah McRaven, our guests, and then we ride for 9 episodes.
And look at, real quick in the credits, you'll see my name.
Okay. No, we hold on it for a while.
Oh, you do? Good.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah, we had a problem with the editing.
Oh, it's broken?
Yeah.
That's what friends are for. Good to see you, man.
Thank you so
congrats
much for having
on
me.
The success.
I appreciate it.
And Mark's available for bar mitzvahs and dinner dances if you like to. I do all that booking. Let's see. Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Steve Grzanich is there right now. All right. I got a scam I'm going to try to run here. Justin, introduce our guest, please.
It's Greg Flam. He is at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram now. And this is the Swap Meet, 312-981-7200. It's been a couple years. Couple weeks. Right. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Good to be back.
Good to have you.
You just said Greg Flam. I've called him Greg Flam forever. Right. Is it Flam or Flam?
It's Flam.
So, Flam, I was trying to be nice and call you Flam.
Right.
Flam,
Steve, you're the king.
Flam?
You're the king. You can say whatever you want.
You're confusing him because David Flam owns Chicago Cut.
No, I just didn't want to call a guy involved in the swap meet a Flam
right.
man.
Hey, it fits, Flam, right?
Flam. The swap meet, of course, if you got collectibles, you got cool stuff at home, you want to figure out the value.
Junk.
Right.
Now you call 312-981-7200. One of my favorite segments each week.
And you want to make sure, right, that we get some callers up front here and some texters even.
I know. So I think 312-981-7200. I think you could sweeten the deal.
Well, I'd like to, but I also would like some free stuff. So Greg always brings stuff in.
Yes.
And what I have, Greg, for you, because you don't work here.
Nope.
You come in, you're a guest, so technically you could win. I have a $50 gift card to Bartolini's Restaurant Catering and Banquets, family-owned and operated, 144th and Pulaski in Midlothian, home of the Chicago best meatballs, and a 10-pound meatball sandwich challenge. When's the last time you had a 10-pound meatball sandwich? And don't
probably
act like
never.
You haven't. Oh, please.
10-pound?
Look, at you're so you're so humble. Look at you. You're like,
Bartolini's open 7 days a week. You can enjoy food and drink specials in the newly renovated bar and expanded dining room, 708-396-2333. Now, you always bring stuff in.
Yep.
So let's see what you brought in, I'll tell you if it's worth the exchange of this gift card. I'll swap you for it.
Fair enough. I try to bring in items that people might have tucked away in their house. So they, and with the government shutdown, people might need extra money. So,
you know, it's funny you say that. This is a thing.
It is.
There are people having garage sales to pay their bills now.
Terrible.
A lot of new eBay resellers. So, yeah. So I brought in a bunch of GAF Viewmaster reels. And some of these, if they're in a packet with the little booklet, can get upwards of $40, $50. I have a few here that are $35,
so
$22.
These are the old Viewmasters.
Yeah, you click them, advance.
Am I right about this? They sold for less than a buck.
Probably back in the day, $1, $1.50. Some of the late 50s were probably less than a dollar.
These were my favorite things when I got new Viewmaster
reels. This was the internet for us.
Oh, my gosh. I'd go crazy.
Yeah. And
right?
Of course, it covered everything from pop culture to just agriculture and landscape and
historical. So, Sandberg, which ones are you looking for?
We've got the Flintstones. We've got the man from UNCLE.
The Flintstones. The man from Uncle?
The
man from Uncle. Alex
spelled it out before her time.
Madame Tussauds. Trousseau's Waxworks, London, England.
And how much are
Lady and the Tramp and Pinocchio?
Is the Flintstones open?
The highest one there is Man from U.N.C.L.E. is $35. That's what that's going for, yeah.
It is open?
Yeah.
Yep.
Napoleon Solo, remember, Steve?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Do you have the viewfinder?
I didn't bring one, no.
Oh, so we got to look through it like it's some sort of CSI episode.
I was gonna say, that's the best part.
I
confirm Fred and Wilma are in the Flintstone one. I'm looking.
I sell them in lots.
All right, hand that over here because I want to see if it's worth a sub.
The Brontosaurus is in there.
If that's not worth a sub, I do have old concert ticket stuff for Kiss at the old stadium.
Oh.
Now, this is going to blow your mind. So these three are all consecutive seats. And they should fetch about $300.
$300 for ticket stubs?
For ticket stubs,
what was the face value?
Good question. $650.
Why are they worth $300?
They're just ticket stubs.
Rock concert stubs, like if you have a Beatles one from the 60s, that could be like $2,000, $3,000. I am not kidding. I just looked them up.
So people come to your house and you go, look what I have framed.
Yep.
I was there? I mean, I don't
understand.
They wanted
for they were there. Some people, like in
no, I mean, were you lying that you were there? I don't understand.
You know, KISS collectors will want every ticket from as many as they can get because they want to complete, like,
the whole tour. Stadium.
I was on the fence for the Flintstones. It's no, I can't do it. I can't do it. You still don't have the sub.
How much is a Jamiroquai at Metro in the late 90s going for?
Yeah, that's like,
you know, it's great to see Chicago Stadium.
It is.
1800 West Madison.
Right?
Just to have that.
That's worth it.
And oddly enough,
how about Tiffany at the mall? Those ticket stubs worth anything?
See, that's
at the mall, probably, yes, if there were tickets for that.
These Viewmaster things, they say on here for stereo viewing. So stereo viewing means 3D amazing viewing.
Stereo viewing meant both speakers, eyes. Both eyes.
Oh, I know. Oh, both eyes.
Yes. 312-917-2200 on the phone or by text. What else have you got?
Well, I did bring in, just for grins,
like
a 1996 Loop poster.
What year?
And 1996. It's actually a calendar poster.
I was on the Loop in 96, and I'm not in the poster.
You did not make
that must have been the day that DeCastro said, hey, we're not shooting a poster today, so feel free not to come in.
You shot the shot, and they're like, we need one person out of this shot. We need to crop this.
Man, my head was too big for the thing.
I will tell you, we've got Johnny B. We've got a bunch of Kevin Matthews. Bonaducci is on here. Our own Wendy and Bill are on here.
Yeah, that's why I brought it in, of course.
Shemp.
I don't.
You got hosed.
I totally got hosed.
Yeah.
Who's they put Shemp on.
Who's this guy?
No, let me see. I can't see it from the.
There's a.
This is the calendar poster from The Loop.
Yeah.
1996.
Oh, it's hard to believe Larry Wirt's in one of these pictures.
I know Larry.
What a shock that he's in, but I'm not.
His shirt is on, though, so I was thrown off because usually he likes the shirt.
I don't remember that guy's name. Isn't that the guy that played Ditka? I think it's the guy that did his Ditka thing.
Yeah.
The guy you pointed out.
So the guy who did
it's a great picture
Ditka
of Buzz Kilman.
Oh. Yep.
Yeah. And, they all look like they're having the best time, whatever they're doing.
The leisure suits on the bottom there?
Yeah.
I mean, there's like everybody that worked there except one. It's so weird.
Maybe the ink hadn't dried on your contract yet?
Yeah, I think the contract was on my hand.
Now I definitely lost the Bartolini's.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that was actually shot prior to my joining
actually
the Loop.
Actually being there. Yeah, well, this looks like it's a collage, so.
Yeah, they couldn't possibly collage me.
Somebody just didn't have any stock footage of you.
All right, you have nothing I need, so I'm going to give this away to a listener.
That's awesome.
So $50 gift card to Bartolini, seventh caller now, 312-981-7200. Meanwhile, John and Randy, hold on. You won't win the sandwich, but you will be on the show.
There you go.
You want to do them next?
Yeah, we'll do it.
Come back and do them next?
We'll come back and do them next.
All right, more with Greg Flam. Doesn't even know Greg Flam. And where will you be this weekend? Greg, where are you being this week?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'll be at Palatine. There's three weekends left, by the way. They're closing on the 27th. Those three weekends, I'll be there in Palatine, Rand Road, 8 to 4 p.m., wolves.com with two Fs if you want information there, or DuPage Picker, Facebook, Instagram.
And that's Saturday and Sunday?
Saturday and Sunday, 8 to 4.
Boy, I tell you, when is it going to be your time?
3 weeks.
All you do is give.
Yep.
All right, back with Greg Flam, and we got some people to run through here on the text line. Justin, start with that phone call, will you?
Okay, let's go with Randy. Randy, welcome to the show. What do you want to brag about, Randy?
Well, I was at an estate sale in my neighborhood, and I bought this box of books, and inside a Hershey's chocolate cookbook was a Hank Aaron baseball card.
Wow.
Was it the rookie card?
I don't have it with me. I don't have it with me, so I don't know what year it is. I don't know anything about it. But I tried giving it back to him. The guy says, no, my son's not into baseball. And I said, okay.
Wow. Well, if it's a rookie card, it's upwards of $13,000.
13 grand.
Yeah, so you might want to check
that. Holy
crap. Yeah.
I think holy crap is a technical term in the memorabilia world.
Yeah, that's,
all right, dude. Good luck with that.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks,
right, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
You want to try Nancy? Let's do Nancy.
Okay.
Nancy. Nancy, you're on the show. What do you want to brag about, Nancy?
Hi. My father was in World War II, and we recently sold their home and found in the basement this binder, and on the front of it, it's green binder, and it says Notgeld, N-O-T-G-E-L-D, and it's full of money. I don't know. A lot of it could be replicas, but many of them have serial numbers on them. There's a couple Franks. There's German money. A lot of it maybe Polish. I mean, some of it, I know, 50 pfennig.
So various worth. European money.
She right. has European money.
Yep. I'm seeing some individual notes for $250.
Wow. And so forth, so $250? That's good.
If you
can good.
Send a picture, I can narrow it down for you.
Snap a picture and send it where?
Facebook. Do Page Picker, Facebook.
Yeah, Greg, how often do you see that when you talk about money or currency, and especially, you know, as the euro has taken over? Does the value of that currency increase because it's out of print?
Out of print? It has to be quite old. You know, I'm not a currency specialist, yeah. but and I have found money at estate sales.
Every money launderer says that.
Yeah, and I've found Korean War and Vietnam era money that, you know, military brought back. But I usually just give it back to the family. I don't mess with it.
Oh, you're a good guy. Three ticket stubs for Zeppelin from Chicago Stadium.
Ooh, wow, look there at you that. Go, yeah.
That might be worth more than the Kiss stubs.
How about that?
Several hundred dollars?
Yeah, probably $400 or $500, you know, probably. Just the newspaper ad that they ran, because back in the day, Zeppelin's last tour, they ran a full-page ad in the Sun-Times and the Tribune to order the tickets. Just that page ad can get $50 wow. just for that ad. Yeah.
Tickets for David Bowie at the Rosemont Horizon, $14. The texture points out you can't park for $14
right,
now.
Right. Exactly. Two beers. So that's
I don't have any ticket stubs, but I did find a Belle Biv DeVoe single. Is that going for anything? A yeah, poison like, on one side, maybe a doomy on the other?
Right. $4 probably. Yeah.
$4?
Yeah.
$11
I'm
antique.
I'm surprised you still have the paper sleeve
well,
for
slightly it. Used. It's yeah, slightly right. used.
Hey, Greg, I've got the ticket to when we saw Bruce Springsteen on the first date with my husband.
Oh, nice.
September.
Sentimental 9th. Value? How much is the sentimental value for
that? Yeah, I mean, that's something you want to keep if it's your first date. You
what know, Greg's trying to say is it's not worth anything. 11-inch antique silver candlesticks with provenance bought in New Orleans in the 70s by my parents.
Wow. Out of my league, I would take it to a silver or gold specialist to begin with and have it appraised.
I have a question just about old money.
Mm-hmm.
The you know, it used to be like you would go yeah. through pennies. You'd go through pennies and right. quarters, whatever, and if you got an old one, you're like, yeah, look at this, 1957. Is that just fun, or is there actual value to old coins?
Well, you always read in the news, there'll be that story of the one penny that was worth, you know, $1 million or whatever. So there's that aspect. But then quarters and like half dollars, you want to look for like 57 or earlier. They were made with more silver, so they're worth more.
You see, a copper penny mm-hmm. was found the other day and change, like from a fast food joint, worth yeah. $1.7 million.
Yeah, I think that I read the same story, and that's those
like
happen
that's
every couple
news.
Years.
Like, who's getting $1 million off a copper penny?
Some dude that wants the copper penny as bad as those tickets on the wall.
I just wish I had the time to like look through all the pennies that you know I come across to look through them and see. I don't even do that. Mm. And same thing with notes, like consecutive numbers or
yeah. I mean, so that's a good you know, point yeah. you just brought up, though. Do you get sick of looking at junk?
I don't really. I mean, a guy I work with and I just bought a huge 10x25-foot locker of. Just packed with toys, and every box we open is like a lottery ticket. Everything we open is just like, oh my god!
Somewhere, Bill box. Left turned like a squirrel hearing something in the woods. 847. I've got a ticket to the Democratic Convention from 1967. Stationary, legal size stationary from the convention as well. Great shape. Tell me what it's worth.
Gonna be 68, right?
Yeah. I'm thinking
they went early.
They went a year early.
50 to 100, maybe. I'd start an auction for okay. sure and see what else is on there.
69 Sports Illustrated with Fergie Jenkins on the front cover, signed Fergie HOF.
Signed. Probably start an auction at $100 for that.
I have a Johnny B. and the Leisure Suits World Tour shirt yeah. with collar from 1988. Johnny might buy that offer.
You know, old concert shirts do really well, so I would think that's $40 to start. You know.
For a long time I had that CD and I held on to that, the Johnny and the Leisure
yeah
shirts.
The blue one yeah, yeah that was yeah, my favorite yeah.
Pabst Blue Ribbon sign, beer signs worth anything?
Oh, of course, yeah. And Pabst and Hams.
What do you mean, of course?
I told you I have before. My Hams from blue with the blue yeah. water yeah. moving, right. and right. my husband won't get rid of it. I'm like, come on!
Yeah, Pabst and Hams are kind
is
of
yours
the hot
in the basement, Mayor?
Yeah, it's doing nothing. It's just sitting there.
Is it plugged in at least?
No, he's just waiting for it, you know, to go to a nice house we'll
no,
never
he's
have.
He's letting
or
it appreciate.
A nice house we're never going to have.
Well, I take consignments.
It seems like it should go up north, your place up
it
north.
It probably will if we could find a place for it.
Kiss World Tour poster, 77, 78 in good condition.
You know, that's $80 to $150. And It's crazy.
That's $20 to $30 per KISS member.
There you go.
It's a great way to look at
original KISS members at that, right?
And what are you looking for this weekend?
Rock concert, anything memorable with that, music equipment. I mean, you won't believe what comes through the door at Peloton. It's you just never know.
You say that with love.
I do. Yeah. And the Wolves have been awesome, and it's closing, but they're going to reopen in October. And, of course, Rosemont will always open every April, so there's that.
What if I had a ticket stub for Anthrax and Public Enemy? And they came through on the Bring the Noise one, tour.
That might get $75.
Slightly used.
It doesn't matter. The Beatles ones are torn in half, and they're getting $2,000.
I want to know why Justin said for a long time he hung on to that Johnny B thing, but then what was the big deciding factor to let go of that?
He met Johnny.
Gem.
That's a good question. There's a lot of, somewhere along the line when you're moving from place to place, CDs are the one thing you're like, just leave it out here.
Yeah.
So I think a bunch of CDs.
Tub of everything.
How about a yellow cab receipt from the day before Uber came to town?
That would be good.
That would be a good one. Someone should list that. See what gets.
Good to see you. What's the Facebook page again?
DuPage Picker, pretty much everywhere. Instagram, Facebook. I even have DuPagePicker.com now. I'm developing it.
Good.
YouTube. And
then more weeks of Peloton.
Three more weeks of Peloton, and everyone will get a break. And God bless Don Wolf. He's put up with everyone there for many years, and he'll get a nice vacation, hopefully.
Good for him.
Yep.
Nice to see you, buddy. Happy New Year.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Greg.
Whenever I need my news update, I go to Andrea. She's Andrea Dallas, baby. She has a nose for news. She can tell us the inside out and what it's really about. She's Andrea
Radio,
Dallas,
TV,
baby.
Who knows what she's up to next? The other night, she almost became her own news story. It was the debut of the show she's going to plug here in a second. And she tried to sneak a piece of pizza in during the break. And I believe she had to be Heimlich by several news people. Is that
she
accurate?
She did not have to be Heimlich. You know what I thought was the coolest is she was talking and it was a little bit troubled. And then she said, you know what? I just took a bite of pizza. And then Michael Heidemann, her producer, slid in and he started talking. And I liked...
Yeah.
We weren't listening, thinking, what happened to her? What's going on?
Yeah, transparency.
Yeah.
So Michael Heidemann gave her the pizza so he could get a little airtime. Is that how it worked?
I think that's what he did.
Andrea Dallas, good morning.
Good morning, you guys. How are you?
Well, I miss you.
I miss you guys, too. I figure Sandberg would understand my pizza plight, but who knew President Trump was going to talk for 7.5 minutes?
I know. I think Andrea, she ate thinking he was going to still go. And all I could think of, though, we have talked about pizza nonstop since I heard you eating pizza. All I want is pizza.
I was pizza. I thought of you immediately.
When are we getting the drive-by?
I was hunkered down. I thought, okay, good. You know what? I'm going to have my pizza. I'm going to listen to the speech, then the Democratic response. And then he was finished.
Yeah.
Typical Trump. Okay. Trump ruins everything.
Right. Ruined my pizza. But I was happy because Sandberg, I knew, was listening to the show because she was texting in questions, which was great.
Oh, very nice. All right. So explain the show. Now, you're on every Wednesday night except when you're on another
Monday
night.
Mondays.
And every Monday night except when you're on Wednesday.
Yes. What we're doing is because we're preempted by Blackhawks and Northwestern, we wanted to start this
soon
show.
To be White Sox.
It's cool. It's cool because I'm super excited because no other station is doing this. It's a reporter roundtable. We're going to talk about issues of the day. We're going to talk politics and things like that. But we're going to talk about being a reporter, too, because so many people ask us questions. You know, it's kind of putting the reporter as the interviewee.
Who is on the show regularly? Or does it depend on how they do?
It's going to it'll depend on how they do. Well, there'll be a grading score. They'll get a gold star.
Sure.
The first panel, it'll be different every week, Steve. Every single week, it'll be different. For the inaugural, I wanted our people, you know, our reporters.
Sure.
So we had Ryan, Anna DeVlantis, Kim Gordon, and David Miranda.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned things about each other that we didn't even know. I mean, people were texting, and did you know Anna went to Oxford, and Kim was a marketing major. She wasn't even a journalism major to begin with, and David is bilingual. And
it tells you everything you need to know about Anna DeVlantis. She went to Oxford, and she never talks about it. Do you know anybody else that wouldn't be going, oh, by the way, I went to Oxford? She never brings it up.
You know.
She never brings it up. Never.
I know. It's great. So we get into, like I said, issues of the day, but also just talking about stories that we've covered, because people ask us all the time, as reporters and journalists, you know, what's the craziest story you've ever covered? Mary's question was a great one, too. Have you ever refused to cover a story?
And the answer for most of the panelists was no. But there, I'm sure there have been reporters who've refused to cover stories for different reasons. But that doesn't mean to say that there are stories that you cover that don't affect you, you know, that really resonate and are very hard to cover.
Sure. Yeah, Andrea, when you're doing a show like this, how much of it is the expertise of the reporter on a specific story they covered? And how much do you have to actually read up and be ready to talk about the more general issues that, that these reporters may not be covering?
Yeah, that's a good question. When you're a general assignment reporter, like we all are, you know, you can cover anything from politics to, you know, murders to fires to anything on any given day. And doing the research on a story that you don't know a lot about is the challenge, but it's also kind of the exciting part of it, too. I mean, yeah, you don't want to...
Oh, sorry, Andrea. I think...
No, you're okay.
Yeah, Anna said something that I wouldn't have thought of. She said, because, you know, she covered crime only for, mm-hmm. like, 10 years or something. So there was no place in the city she could go without thinking about terrible things, because she covered all of it.
Right.
And every reference had to do related to crime because of what she was covering.
It's so true. And then off the air, and we were talking off the air about that. I said, we have to bring this to... on the air, because that was so interesting. And we were all talking about different restaurants we've gone to. It's like, oh yeah, I went to that restaurant in Pilsen, but I covered a fire two blocks away. You know, so when I covered just crime for Channel 9, we would always, you know, if they knew we were going to a certain neighborhood, like Little Village or wherever there might be high crime, Austin, we would know, oh, you know what? And this sounds crazy, but this had the good bathrooms, or this had the clean bathrooms, and this had, you know, great food, 24-hour food, because if you're out at a story at 2 in the morning, you have to know where to eat and use the bathroom.
Looks so like a Private Eye movie. Like, you got food on the dashboard, you're staking it up. And DeVlantis, I know, has gotten more than her share of threats about stories she did, investigative stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were talking. I asked them each. And it was funny because I told them a couple of the questions I was going to ask ahead of time so I wouldn't blindside them. But I wanted to know the most interesting story that they've ever covered, because we do get asked that all the time. And I wanted to know the story that got away, or something that was unfinished, or that they still are chasing. And that was the question that all four, they said, oh, my gosh. And they immediately knew this was the story that got away, or that they wanted to continue. And Anna's was, you know, continuing to investigate corruption, which she won a couple of Emmys for, too.
Right. What about you?
You know, it's funny, because Kim said that, too. Kim said, well, you didn't tell your stories that got away, or you weren't telling. And I said, yeah, but I want it to be about them. I want it to be about the panelists.
Typical host making it about everyone else.
I know. I don't think there's a story that got away, Steve, but there's just... I do like the in-depth stories with Chicago, and I love now, you know, remember the council wars back in the day?
Sure.
You know, so I don't want a council war, but I think the makeup of our city council now, with Rahm leaving and a new mayor coming in and possibly a new police chief, superintendent rather, and the whole makeup of the council changing, I think this is going to be stories day after day for many years to come, especially if they change, you know, the makeup of the council, like one of the candidates wants to do is just basically slice the number of aldermen in half. So I think there's going to be a lot of great stories coming out of Chicago and our council and our politics for many years to come.
It's funny, Andrea, that you were asking them those stories with the Jim DeRogatis been following the R. Kelly stuff since, you know, 1998 or something. And it made me think when you were talking to our reporters here, how there's no... You think a reporter covers a story, we see him on TV, they cover it, and that's the end of it. But, like, there's your own innate interest in trying to get to the bottom of something, even though you're not an investigator, you know, you're not the police. But, like, one of them, I don't know if it was Kim, said the Lane Bryant murder, you know, because they had such detail
that.
Yeah, and, like, that they still think about it. I didn't think that reporters still thought about stuff they were covering.
Well, you think about that, too, that Lane Bryant story, because that's not where you grew up. And
that was mine during the show that it would always kind of
but not even a trace, you know. That's still a crazy story that after all these years, not even a trace of a lead that's legitimate on getting the person that did it,
you know. And persons. We really do. That's a good point too from both of you. We do take these stories home, and you know, it does get easier to a point to leave a story where it is and then go home for the day. But
as you get older, I almost think it's kind of the opposite. You know, it resonates with you and sticks with you. That Tinley Park, and you hit the nail on the head, Steve. I grew up in Orland. I went to high school in Tinley at Andrew, not far from Lane Bryant. And to have a story like that so violent and the description of the suspect was so...
it was vivid.
Pinpoint yeah. on. It was very vivid and jarring. And this whole scene... And not a trace. And this is 10 years old. You know, this is a case that's gone so cold, although Tinley Park will say that it's still open. It is an open investigation.
Well, but let me ask you, like, the Browns chicken murders took forever. I mean, you know, it's not like
17 years.
Yeah, it's not like it's not going to get solved, but it's just it's a nightmare for the families of the victims, obviously.
And you know what, too, Steve, is that I think there was a stat. It was either 75 or 80% of these crimes, these cold cases, are solved because somebody talks. Or DNA.
Right.
I mean, DNA, you'd like to think, okay, the science, boom, you know, it doesn't move that quickly, obviously, with many of these cold cases. But that stat was huge, that someone just talks or lets the cat out of the bag after all these years, or someone knew about it and was afraid to come forward.
Well, imagine the secrets Dave Ennett has that he's not letting out. Wait till I get his, DNA back.
Hi, Andrea.
Yeah, right. Hi, Dave.
All right, so plug it again. It's going to be on Monday nights?
Okay. Yeah, it's Monday nights unless there's a Hawks game or sports, Northwestern, and it'll be on Tuesday. So it's 7 to 8 o'clock, and it's called Andrea and the Reporters, a different panel every single week. Next week, we have our friend Stacey St. Clair and John Cass and a TV reporter as well from Channel 9. I'll let that be a surprise because I'm still waiting to confirm.
Cass just had a big health scare, by the way.
What's that?
Cass just had a big health scare. Yeah, he's okay now.
My mom actually told me about that before I read the column. She's a very big John Cass fan. I think it's a Greek thing.
Dave Ennett has a question.
Hey, well, you know, since you mentioned Channel 9, so you and I share a drawer in the makeup room.
What kind of drawer is it, Dave? Is it a makeup
drawer? It's a makeup drawer. And I have just one little plastic.
Someone else shares our drawer, too, Dave.
Who else is in there?
Somebody else put their name on our drawer, too.
Who is it? Who else? Out him.
I think Paul Lisnick.
Paul Lisnick. I think it might be.
Well, he wears a lot of makeup.
That wasn't Super Joe approved.
No, it wasn't. Nor was it AD approved.
Do you need a pole?
Well, no. Well, see, so I have this little plastic bag with just a couple of things that
you need. We call that a makeup bag, Dave.
Dave, I just gave you a brand new makeup bag.
Well, no, but that doesn't go in the drawer.
Oh,
this is that's just, for the makeup you wear at home?
They just give us like sandwich bags to put our makeup in.
You guys.
But you have a big plastic bin.
Dave, she's a girl. You're a dude.
Okay.
You want my bin?
I'd like to share it.
Hold on. Let me go to Sanbury on this as a consultant. Your husband wears more makeup than you do. So TV makeup for men is what? Two things.
Powder.
A little powder and a little, you know.
No.
They don't wear eyeshadow.
They wear a tinted, you know, like
foundation.
Yeah, they wear regular foundation.
Powder.
Yeah, but it's not like all the stuff that girls have to go through.
Yeah, they don't need mascara. And,
some of the guys do.
Some of them do.
Some of them use it.
Right. Who's working
some
their
of the
eyeliner?
Guys wear eyeliner, too.
And everyone knows Dave's a French clown as well. So he's got all that makeup, too.
Yeah,
so there's
a
lot. He's got a lot of
stuff. For my mime stuff.
He's a geisha. On weekends, he's a geisha.
For my mime stuff. That's my favorite sentence. We'll hear you on the radio tonight. Nice to have you on.
You got it, you guys. Dave, you can share my bin. I love you guys.
Thanks.
I don't know what that means. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea.
I can share my bin. Sounds personal. So you're saying, Bill, everybody that's anybody is on that Loop calendar.
Here's what they did, Steve. They did a survey of everybody in the Chicagoland area. And they
said pre-internet. This is 1996.
Before the internet, who matters to you in the world of music and in talk?
And don't leave anybody out.
Everybody
associated with the Loop. The Polish cleaning lady.
She was on there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, I was on the Loop in 1996. I didn't see me on the calendar.
Oh, yeah.
And they just took pictures, various pictures. They didn't have
it's definitely a collage.
Yeah.
I don't know whose cat that is either. It's not my cat.
They put the cat on?
The cat was on.
Oh, maybe that was in place of you.
Cat and the cat.
Steve, you know what you could equate it with? Remember We Are the World, how everybody that was important in music at the moment was a part of it?
Everybody.
That's how the calendar was.
Right. The weird thing is Quincy Jones produced the calendar.
Yes.
Same thing.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. I was probably busy that day.
Yeah,
I vaguely remember Jimmy DeCastro calling me and going, there's no calendar shoot today.
Right.
It's not happening today.
Right.
There's no calendar shoot. So I thought there was no calendar shoot that day.
Oh.
Yeah.
They'll probably redo it or something.
You imagine the apathy at a Loop reunion calendar shoot?
Record breaking.
It would be good if there was alcohol served.
Yep.
You still wouldn't get anybody to fly in. Matt Linbow, 19-year-old Eagle Scout from Redwood Falls, Minnesota, was on the show today. Were you a Boy Scout?
A Cub Scout.
Yeah, I quit after Cub Scouts.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. It was too violent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt achieved every merit badge possible.
Golly.
Really?
137 merit badges.
Wow.
And that'll be up in podcast here in just a few minutes if it's not up already.
I think it's already up, and he's a pretty impressive young man. He said the most challenging badge was bugling because he had braces, and it's hard to bugle with braces.
Bugling, sure. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, how many scouts do we know that were killed bugling?
Right.
He also sold $10,000 worth of popcorn. I didn't want to bring up that popcorn is very expensive. So when you buy it, it's like $40. So.
You think that's expensive? You should see the amount of Girl Scout cookies I bought here the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice, they're up to $5
I don't want
to
say which nice mom is selling Girl Scout cookies for her lovely daughter, but Stephanie made a killing.
Oh.
Yeah, but they're still $5 a box.
Yeah. But it's down to eight cookies.
The Boy Scout popcorn is the least expensive item you can get if you see them outside the Home Depot is like $23 for a tin of popcorn.
Mm. And here's
the
thing.
Not that good.
Here's the thing. I can't turn down a kid. There's a Walgreens across the street from my place. I literally have gone to a Walgreens 4 miles away because I saw the kids outside, and I've already been hit for $20 tins of popcorn like four times. Because I can't do it. I can't walk by the cute kids selling popcorn.
Do you stop at lemonade stands if kids have them out?
I look the other way. Oh, la, la, la! But I leave money all over for these cute kids. You got a cute kid? You need some money?
Yeah.
Get him in front
Come
of
to
me.
Steve.
Get him in front of me. Lord knows I won't be at the Loop calendar shoot.
No, probably not.
Just wait till Abigail, a Girl Scout, selling the cookies.
Yeah, don't come bother us.
She'll break every record.
I know.
Come bother you. You're all already in. Mandatory. What are you doing on the show today?
Well, Rick Steves, travel expert Rick Steves, will join us at 11:05.
He's got to get a last name. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, it's a lot of first names.
Yeah.
And then an earth-shattering announcement from David Hochberg.
This is a big announcement.
An earth-shattering announcement.
It's a big announcement. Yeah, it really is.
New NMLS number. How will I keep up?
There's a great
he was at the Loop catalog shoot.
There's a great
calendar.
Calendar? Same word.
Was there a catalog words. Shoot?
Yeah,
I wasn't invited to that
shoot.
Either.
He was holding a calculator.
There was a catacomb shoot.
You remember there was a Loop store over here at Near North?
Yeah.
And I remember going into the Loop store after I'd worked there for like a year and a half, and I was looking around for something with me, and they did have it. They had a picture of me holding a T-shirt with Danny Bonaducci's face on it. So I feel like I was
part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there's no record, it didn't happen, Steve. So
see you tomorrow.